All right, I'm all good here.
Yeah, I'm recording.
I'm recording. So, will we go?
Is Andy recording?
Yeah, I said.
We're good. Between us, we cannot stop this up.
We'll see about that.
Oh, Matt.
That sounds like a challenge, Matt.
Oh, God. I got to start this off, don't I?
Yeah,
you're hosting, Mikey.
Shut up.
We're all looking at you.
Well, you're only human. Okay, so we'll get started?
We're starting.
So, okay, 5, 4, something, something. Hello, all. This is me. I am Michael. How are you? This is a Many Different Things podcast, which is basically being done to spite JD. Yeah, it's Kamen Rider Double look back since the series ended last week. Not sure the date, but like end of August kind of thing. If I sound unprofessional, it's because I've been put in charge because the other people here are incredibly lazy. However, okay. But shut up. I'm in charge. I shall talk.
Okay, sir. Okay.
See, you ruined the surprise now. I was going to say, since I'm very uninteresting on my own, I have very talented guests. But now they know you're here, and they know I'm obviously lying.
Oh, okay, okay.
So, I have very untalented guests. So, I don't know. Who wants to go first introducing themselves?
Hi, this is Time Lord.
Hi!
That's him.
Sorry, wrong button.
You just shot the wrong voice clip, man. I've done that before. It's embarrassing.
I know. I pressed the wrong nipple. Each nipple has a different sound effect.
Hi, everybody.
Just so you know, this is going well. Person evangelist, just say hello.
Hi. I just wanted to take a moment to say that I'm really, you know, I'm here mostly to speak out against a really nasty influence in the Kamen Rider community who goes by the name of Andy Millman. He single-handedly gets all of us hooked on these things, and we all spend our money. And I know a lot of you guys don't know if you can speak up, and I'm here to tell you you can. You know, tell Andy, hey man, stop making me spend money. You know, he lies
with his filthy human mouth.
I mean, like, no, I'm just a spectator to all this. I don't know, you know, how much, you know, horrible influence Andy's been spreading, but I've been hearing about it, and, you know, I'm right behind you guys, you know? If you are suffering monetarily because of Andy, if you're getting hooked on these Kamen Rider things because of Andy, you know, it's okay. It's happened to a lot of people, and I can help you cope, especially if you're a girl.
Can I just take this moment to say thank you for the candy toys, Chris?
I don't know what you're talking about. Those were sent by museum.
I hate you both, just so you know, because I wouldn't have spent far too much of my life in the last few months catching up on Kamen Rider series if it wasn't for you two. So, thank you.
What you mean? You
so
mean Andy
much.
And Time Lord? What are you talking about?
He made me what I am today.
I've cut the cord, Andy. Master. You know, every child comes out attached to the mother, and one day the mother must cut them free, and I have done that.
One day. For a few years, you're allowed to hang off your mother.
She said, no! I was going to say, no, vile woman, I want to go back!
Let me back in!
Well, at some point in this, I was going to talk about Kamen Rider. Right, just so we don't spend the next 5 hours making each other laugh too much. Right, Kamen Rider Double. It was the most recent series, to us anyway, since this is not being recorded by this weekend where Kamen Rider O's will have started. And I thought it would be kind of fun to get some people together. As I said, the two people whose fault it is, I watched this rubbish, and Matt, who I know. I brought together just basically to have a bit of a chat about it. Partly because I thought it would be just interesting to have a retrospective post the entire show, and partly because I never get to talk about this stuff anyway. So we might as well get started before we go back on to the benefits of child rearing.
The womb!
I just wanted to... the womb is a fantastic place, and I'm sure it's lovely decor, but anyone want to get... Vangelis, since you're the one who's from outside Europe, so look stunned, put on a stunned face.
He's still a part of the Commonwealth, you know.
This feels
the Commonwealth is a lie.
I'm being profiled. I'm being profiled by my nationality.
And everyone points and stare at him who is different.
I do every day, especially when he has expensive things. I stare.
You know what we do in my country to people who are different, eh?
Make them prime minister.
Yeah.
UK politics fly over my head. I'm sorry.
Fabulous. Chris, you. How were you introduced to Double, and sort of what was the first impressions? Go on.
Well, with Double, by this point, you know, 2009, I've been watching Kamen Rider since 2002, or late 2002. So this was not really a case of me getting shown the show and getting into it. It's more like, hey, it's the new Kamen Rider. I ought to watch it because I dig this stuff. And I was there with the first crowd. Everyone who claims they didn't do this, usually they're lying. We saw the first pictures of Double, and we said, cool, split in half, that's neat. Then we said, oh no, wait, there's three different colors for each different half. There's going to be tons of toy gimmickry crap stuff. It looks silly. Oh my god, Shotaro and Philip. Philip looks like a girl. This is going to be horrible. So I was right there being a negative Nancy for a little while. And then heard them talk, and I heard that Philip, you know, speaks in a fairly low male voice for a 17-year-old Japanese boy. I was expecting from the look of the show a whole lot of toy gimmickry, overshadowing stuff, and a whole lot of J-boyness. And I don't have as much against J-boyness as some of my friends do, but after Kiva, I was getting a little tired of it, and... with Double, after seeing the first episode, I was kind of just won over. I watched the first episode on YouTube while I was at PAX 2009 on the last day. It was new then, so I just popped it up, and I was like, alright, let's see what this is like, and I saw that opening sequence, and I was like, that was a lot cooler than I was expecting. And then I hear the characters talk, I see them act, and I'm like, wow, they aren't being... you know, effeminate little J-boys. They're actually kind of getting down to business. And as the show went on, that's what really held me in, among other things, was that the show really stayed on track and kept business going, even when it got silly. Like, it wouldn't be silly for very long. It didn't drag things out for 10-plus episodes, or at least drag negative things to me out for that long. It, you know, if someone was feeling angsty, if something silly was going on, it was kind of like, it's happening, it's done. So that's what caught me and what held me on as someone who tends to watch these things anyway.
Matt! Any opinions? I don't care.
I'll admit, I'm a relative newcomer when it comes to Kamen Rider. I'm not even going to drag that abomination that came out like during the 90s. No, sorry. I started with Kamen Rider Decade. And the reason why I started with Decade, amongst all things, because they were going to visit the previous riders. So not only was it going to be like my first Kamen Rider, it was also going to be an education for me. And I have to say, it pulled me right in. So when Decade was ending, and I was well documenting the fact that, Jesus, they'd cut this series short to way too short. I was watching, like Chris, I was watching the... So they've got like a gender... when I was looking at Philip, because you can't escape the fact that he had the whole J-boy slash all I'm an idol kind of thing. And then you had this other one sort of dressed up like in fancy dress like a gumshoe, and it was like, okay, we just had like 31 episodes of total seriousness, and then we're getting this. So I visited the first episode with a little bit of trepidation, and I've got to say, with the exception of like Akiko, I'm gonna have to apologise. My pronunciation of Japanese names is notoriously crap.
Gaijin!
I'm so sorry. I shall refer to her as Slipper Girl. Let's just say that.
No! You can't call it that. Just think about that for a second.
You had it right, Matt. It's Akiko. So you're on the right track.
It's Akiko. Just stick with
Anyway. With that small exception, that first episode pulled me right in. I was like, what the hell was I worried about? I mean, this was actually pretty damn cool. And I'm happy to say I went through the whole series. There's possibly like a couple of bum notes in the show, but apart from that, best show ever. And damn it, a little lump of plastic with a bit of very high sugary candy goes a long way.
What are you talking about? I don't understand.
Well, thanks to some guy in Canada, I went ahead and bought some more from eBay.
If you see this guy in Canada, you know, since you're there, if you see the guy in Canada, just sort of tell him we're unhappy for Matt.
And then kick him in the nads.
I'll just tell you, this guy in Canada, whoever he is, I bet his nads are... So I'm just leaving that on the table for you.
That's quite worrisome, actually. So, like, someone digs up a skeleton in 100 years.
They are still pulsing.
My God, look! We could still use this for reproduction. Andy?
I guess I started out on a lone night near 4 o'clock in the morning when a man from Canada who Matt may be aware of and others may be aware of got me when I was weak and when his power was at its peak. And he showed me an intro for a show called Decade, with explosions and special effects, oh my. And I was enthralled by it. I saw the glitz and the glamour and stuck with it. And quickly, because the show hadn't finished, I downloaded more series and worked backwards. As Decade was coming out, I watched more of the other series, like Indeno and Kiva and ones like that. And by the end of Decade... there was a preview for the next show, and by that point I was hooked like a weedy on the spit roast of life, and continued. I didn't think too much about it because I was busy watching the other series, so I didn't catch much of the look at the silly girly man Philip and stuff like that. I remember when I heard the gimmick it was going to be half and half, my initial reaction was going to be, oh no, they're going to separate them at some point and they won't be able to transform because that's the generic thing they do. Like with Dragon Ball Z when they did that little fusion thingy and shows like that. That was my initial worry. And it took me a little bit longer, I'd say, to get into Double. Because I'd say the first two episodes were slow. But by, I think it was about episode 10, I was pretty much stuck in with the show and was like, I am really enjoying this. It was a nice, fun way to go. So, yeah. And the toys were pretty good as well.
I have to get some of them.
You do.
I have no money, but I'm holding out for Fang Joker. Right, I might as well get my one. I didn't get into Kamen Rider until Double had already started. It was maybe 10 episodes in. And I don't remember how, but I was just like flicking and saying, I remember that show when I was young that was really bad. What was that based off of? And I just started flicking through stuff. And I was looking at the Double advertising and early images and whatnot, and I was really put off by it. I didn't like the gimmick of having the two minds in one body. I wasn't crazy about the actual suit design at the time, and I think I expected it to be a bit more complex than it was. But, I don't know, there's a lot of stuff that put me off. I missed out on all the fanboy, oh my god, J-boy, J-boy, only just from Ten Justice this week. So I basically... I don't know why I picked it, but I started with Deno. I adored it, still do. And I was like, yay. Then I watched Kiva in Decade, and I was slightly less yay. I apologize to anyone who's a fan of Decade. I'm really not a big fan.
I'm of two minds about the show, if it helps. Like, I go both ways on that one.
Oh, damn. Now.
I'm of the opinion I like to watch the Hibiki fight because it's bizarre. But I just sort of said, you know what? I didn't like the look of the show, but, you know, I can't just turn off because of the look. I started watching Double, and I caught up within a week. And I just stuck with it. I really enjoyed it. There were, as the lad said, a couple of bum notes, but I find they were very few and far between. And I'm really, really sad it's gone now.
Oh.
If for no other reason than I actually quite like Akiko.
Good man.
But, yeah.
I will say, though, about Akiko, I was the first to admit that she was just a wee bit annoying. But you know what? She actually grew on me by the end. She was nowhere near as annoying. You just took that on board as her little quirk. And it was not like she put on a full effect for the episode. It's like she wasn't the integral part. And sometimes you did actually feel for her, because at the end of the day, her dad was dead. So,
spoilers.
Oh, yeah. Incidentally, if you're listening to this, we're discussing an entire television series, and we might actually drop spoilers now and then.
Mind is blowing.
I was going to say that
if you want spoilers, I just need to say the end of Titanic, iceberg.
No!
Oh!
What happens in Passion of the Christ, though? Because I can't find the DVD anymore.
I think he joined the club, didn't he? A dance club.
Mel Gibson's head just swells to the size of a balloon and he floats.
Does he win the Oscar? Does he get the Emmy? Does he get the Golden Globe? I just wanted to agree with Matt about
Akiko. Write a book about that called The Da Vinci Code.
Good God. I'm not getting into the Da Vinci Code. No, we're not doing the Da Vinci Code. We're not having the first podcast I'm in charge of devolving into the Da Vinci Code and the Passion of the Christ.
So guys, what was your thoughts of Angels and Demons?
Well, you know, I have a lot of expectations of Angels and film.
Shut up! Everyone shut up.
Isn't that the one with the Care Bears?
I agree with Matt about Akiko and the dead dad thing. I was actually just talking to my friend Jacob about that yesterday, because I got him caught up to episode 32, and one thing that I might talk about a lot here is that Double breaks a lot of Japanese drama tropes, and one thing it broke that I really liked was that Akiko, when she figures out her dad is dead sometime in the interim of Begins Night, she does not then spend 10 episodes screaming "Eah!" and sitting in a cold, dark room crying that her dad is dead. She literally just at one point says, "Oh, my dad's dead," and then kind of just, like, she's dealt with it. That's one of the big strengths of Double, is that you don't have characters who hit some personal, you know, emotional low and then spend months of showtime talking about how sad they are about it. They deal with it, and that's why I really liked Gurren Lagann when I first saw it back in 07, is there's a point where a character gets very down in that, and he's over it after, like, three episodes, and I was so used to characters in Japanese media, when they get down, they'll spend, like, 10, 12, 15 episodes just like, oh my god, I'm so sad! And, you know, it's cool the first time, but then once you see it enough times, you start going like, okay, like, you know, you're a superhero, you know, man up for crying out loud.
I like Akiko. I do. I actually like her a lot because I thought she was funny. I didn't really find her annoying. And it wasn't like it was like in the middle of Kuga or Kabuto or something where you've got this really serious atmosphere and blah, blah, blah. And then suddenly you've got a character who shows up and is just, I'm so funny, and off they go, and you really hate them. I mean, like, I'm watching Blade at the moment, and that milk-drinking guy, why?
He goes away, if it helps. Like, he doesn't go away, but they kind of tone him back once they get their writing chops.
Stick with it.
Oh, I don't know. I get Christ for that! Sorry.
I get he's there, for Chalice's storyline more than anything else, but I just, he's not funny. But Akiko is funny. And then she has the Slipper of Doom, which I don't know why, but I find it hilarious every time she just whacks someone in the head. And it just, it's a lighter team show. You know, you do have serious bits in it, but it is a bit where you just sort of, and off you go. And she just, like, when she had the breakdown because she suddenly realized they didn't ask me to dress up as the girl, I absolutely love that. She just collapsed in the spotlight over the floor. She's like, but I'm a girl, but he's wearing the girl's clothes, but I'm the girl. And then, like, she catches him and says, wow, he's really pretty. And then she just starts hitting him.
Wow, Mikey. I'm sorry for shouting that out, by the way. It's just, I can't stand that milk drinker either.
No, it's another, if I can actually make it relate to Double, it's another strength of Double, is that, like, Blade is a show I really stick up for, but I certainly cannot defend that it is a very weak start. I mean, there are people who have watched it who told me they thought it was great from start to end, and I'm glad about that, but Blade had a really weak start before it figured out where it wanted to be, and another thing about Double is, Double had a bit of a weak start, but the weak start of Double was the first two episodes, and then they found where they want to be, because this kind of flows into something else, but I think we've all, like, all of us who have tried to show people Double, all of us who have seen Double, I've seen it every time. A lot of people who didn't finish the show stopped after episode two because they said, I can't take this CG anymore, and I always tell them,
Jai, I'm like, hear this, Jai?
Yeah, I'm always like, dude, the CG is done after episode, I mean, it's there, but episode two is the low point of the CG.
So I was going to bring that up when I wanted to. Since we got into Akiko, we might as well do the characters, because I have a plan. I was going to bring that up when we got onto the dough pants, but before we do that, anything you want to say about her, Andy? Or were you just silently appreciative?
I would echo the words of everybody else. She annoyed me at first, but then I kind of got used to her, and like Matt said, it was just one of her quirks, and it worked more in that universe with the funny and serious moments that they had. So, no, she was a good character. I enjoyed her.
All right. So, Dopant. I really wanted to talk about this, because the Dopants really appeared to me. Appeared to me? Yes, they appeared before me in a flash of light one day and said, come join us.
On my spirit here. Quest.
You just found me trying to, like, shove a USB into my skin, just going, I'll change. I'll change. I really, really like them. There are a few reasons I like them. One, their name comes from the word doping, and it's just, I love the fact they've actually made it a drug reference, and like early on you've got, oh, by the way, drugs screw with your brain and make you want to eat your old childhood friends. which I think is a good message myself. I love the fact that they're not, primarily they're not animal based, because God love Kamen Rider, it is a bit one trick pony when it comes to what it bases its villains off of.
Bats and spiders.
Yeah, and lions, and you know, you can pick, if hold out your hand, you can pick out every monster that will usually appear in them. But I mean, this one is like based in concepts and emotions, and you do have a few animals, but they're anomalocaris, they're just something weird like that. Where the hell did they pick that one out of? we're going to have the scariest shrimp of all time be a monster for two episodes. Why?
And a sniper. An underwater sniper.
Underwater sniper shrimp. That's fantastic.
Was the most generic one probably, was it grasshopper?
I think it was like, there was actually one that was literally just called bird.
Oh,
I mean,
but,
hopper,
yeah.
They gave her like that electric kick.
Yeah.
That was kind of cool. Bird was just, I'm a flying bird and I shoot feathers.
And I'm
a
children.
You got like, stuff like, oh, that was a weird one. It's just like, we've got old, you got utopia and terror. Like the two big ones are based off, you know, massive concepts and emotions and things, and I just, really original thinking. I mean, it didn't always work in the designs. Old was very, I had no idea, like the designer was going, I've got to do something that represents aging. I'll give him eyes in the back of his head.
Well, also, what about Yesterday? Like, that was one of the most out there concepts I'd seen for a while. Like, just the very nature of how the Yesterday powers worked. I was like, that's kind of crazy, but in a neat way.
And a neat costume design as well, I'd say, with a giant hourglass for a face.
Yeah.
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 And, of course, I definitely want to give some time over to this guy when we talk about him fully, but Asaka's design, the weather design, it was like a samurai war, some sort of ancient Japanese thing that said nothing about weather, but just said everything about cool.
Well, I don't mean to be a bad influence at all, but did you know that they just recently put up for pre-order a Weather yes. DuPont SH Figure Arts toy?
Oh, damn it all to hell!
It looks super good as well. He can do the finger point in the sky for lightning.
Oh, God. Like, you can have him posed with Kuga, and if Kuga can outpoint the other one, and then Kuga explodes.
Oh, yeah. Kuga Kabuto. I was going to say, they could all point at each other.
You! Matt, I think I talked over you there a couple of times. I apologize.
Oh, just completely. Anyway, you raised what I was going to raise anyway, what with the drug-taking motive anyway. So, really, I haven't really got much to add. I will say the concept behind Nazcar was pretty cool because you couldn't necessarily say he was a villain. You couldn't necessarily say he was a good guy either. There's very much a motive where the road to hell was paved with good intentions because this dude really did love Futo and he was thinking on their best interests, but he was using some very devious means to get there and some very underhand tactics. And in the end, it bit him on the arse. He got into the family and you know what led to there. And in the end, it was natural sort of good intentions that led to him making the decision he got. I like Nazcar. I actually pretty good like.
I have to admit, I think it's like turning half good kind of came out of nowhere. I mean, we saw him, like, there were moments earlier on, like, you're not really suited to this family yet, are you? You're not really meeting the expectations, are you? But suddenly, oh, by the way, I actually just wanted everything to be all right.
I actually think there was some foreshadowing going on, even in his earliest scenes, what with him, that one scene where you saw him in the shower and he seems to be at pains with himself. That was pretty early on. And then there's some little things on the undergrowth. I mean, yeah, I'm saying he's not exactly a good guy either. He's done some really pretty horrible things, and he has killed people. But there's a very much a sense of the road to hell was paved with good intentions in mind there with him. But I wouldn't say it came out of left field. I think it was waiting to happen. I always thought he was going to stick around longer than he did, though.
Yeah, that was a bit of a shocker.
Yeah. I do also think that some of Weather's storyline was adopted from him, though, and they just sort of took traits onto it. But I'm kind of glad that his character was separate from the other as well, because this guy was a freaking psycho.
Wonderfully acted, too.
Oh, God.
When he had her on the table, and she was taboo, and he was stroking bits of her, I was just thinking, like, he'd been on screen for 2 minutes. I like him.
Did you guys watch the TV Nihon version of that episode?
I watched... I think I did a thing where I'd watch the first sub out, and then I'd watch the Nihon one when it came out.
Because they actually did a little montage at the end of that episode with... I think it was the first airing of Nobody's Perfect, that song. Oh. But it was done to this sort of big romantic montage, and you had like Shotaro chasing the Spink guy, the bad singer, and it's all sort of like romance going on. Then you had him going all leery at her in slow motion while she was in a DuPont form, and I think it was even one of the administrators or something, but he had this real on sort of weirded out look to his face, and rather comical.
Chris, Weather and Nazca.
Well, they were, of course, very memorable designs. And the thing about Nazca, or Kirihiko Nazca's demise, was that tied into something else that I keep bringing this up only because I've seen so much Kamen Rider, and Double did this so well, is that another trope Double broke is that it actually made death an incredibly impactful event, in that when Double Rider kicks dudes, he doesn't kill them. He just breaks the Gaia memory in them. So when you have it actually happen where someone dies, like when Kirihiko is dead, that was actually pretty big, because in Double, villains don't just die all the time. Like someone dying in Double is an event. Similarly with Isaka, when he finally goes, it's gruesome. And since Double did not kill off a lot of people all that often. It was, again, like, you kind of expected it, but then again, like, since it's always about memory breaks, and then, oh, you know, they're losing the effects of the dopants, toxins in their heads. Whenever you see someone actually go, and when you see someone go getting literally eaten alive by memory ports, you're like, good lord, like, that was a glorious way to go. But with weather, Isaka, one thing I really want to tell people about that they might not know, although they could have just gone to Wikipedia like me, I'm not sure, is I thought he was a marvelous actor, and I wanted to see more stuff that he's in. And he's actually typically just a voice actor, and I believe this was his very first on-screen role.
Really?
Yeah, usually he's just a villain voice actor, so this is the first time he appeared on screen.
Holy crap.
And just
does he usually play?
I think he's typically villain characters, like characters who sound very much like Isaka, but the way the dude was able to do this, like, you know, his facial expressions, the way that he was able to hold this, like, this Hannibal Lecter level of monotone and slight grinning and stuff, and the body language, I was like, this guy is really good at being on screen. Right down to the whole thing of, like, guess where I stick my weather memory? I stick it into the side of my head. You know, like, just little touches like that added to the creep factor. His little bowler hat, you know.
Oh, I love the bowler hat, and he's like the suit with little. I'm an accountant of this.
Yeah, the guy was so good at his role. I was astounded when I found out that he's almost never been on screen, at least according to the meager internet research I did. On Dopants at the Hole, I've got to say that, you know, I've been totally won over by a whole lot of them, because I'm hitting the stick that makes Dopant name noises come out of it. But the designs on them, as you said, they were at times a little bit strange, but it was such a nice break from the Animal Kingdom approach, and some of them were pretty legitimately terrifying, like Virus, for instance.
That was a creepy, you know, that was a weird one, because it was like, she was run over, but she had the memory, but because she's unconscious, it got sucked into the car, and now it's got a body, and then you just got, like, the bit where they just hold up the gun and go trigger explosion, and it's not the usual thing, it's like to just quiet, put it out of its misery, and it's making the screaming, why is it screaming, and...
Yeah. And stemming off that, too, I liked that they actually had, you know, even if it is really fiction science, they had a science to how the dopant memories worked. And a lot of times, Kamen Rider tends to not really have a lot of science behind what happens in it. Like, you know, even if it's just stupid stuff, like you stick the memory in and it turns you into a monster of your emotions or something. Like, a lot of Kamen Rider shows tend to skip over the pseudoscience stuff outside of, like, some magazine articles that tend to get ignored by the writers. So having them explain things like, you know, it's toxins, or the reason why people with dopant memories always seem to turn evil is because their brains get eroded due to not filtering the toxins, and that's what the drivers do. And so Double's memories are purified of toxins, like things like that, little touches like that, which are very throwaway, were still really welcome to me because it, like, added a bit of an air of legitimacy to the fiction, like in the realm of dudes who are beating each other up by transforming into bug men. It was just another thing that really pumped up the show for me. That, and like I said, the fact that dopants, they weren't monsters of the week who got killed. They were characters who were usually, you know, victims of their own hubris of some kind or tragedy or something like that. And afterwards, like, my favorite part of Double come episode 2 was the fact that Double does his rider kick and then he says, "I'm gonna leave the rest to the police." I was like, yes, it's like a legit superhero. Like, it's new to me in this genre. So that is another thing that the dopants really did well, I thought, was be a cool villain force that weren't too feral or too well-organized. They were a really great foil for all the protagonists, I thought.
Mm. Andy, I have a strange suspicion you have something to say about weather.
Do I?
Given the fact that every time I've ever said the word weather, you just say yes!
Yes. Yeah, I love weather. Weather was just awesome. Like, Chris and Matt and you have echoed, the suit, the acting, the dude was epic. I love the fact that he was able to, if you excuse the term, bed Sayako without even trying. He was just like, "Hey, woman, you're a man." And she's like, "Oh, Saka." And that's all it took for her to be broken by him. I thought that was quite good. And she loved him properly as well to the end, which was quite good. One of the suits I will defend because of its ridiculousness was T-Rex.
No, anything but that one. Come on.
I'm kind of on your side. Kind of.
Don't be that guy. Don't be that guy.
Because it was ridiculous. It was just the head of the T-Rex with some little arms and legs.
I'll tell you which Dopant did it for me, because of its sheer simplicity. It wasn't overly monstrous or anything like that. But I did kind of like it for a little bit of nicheness. Clay Doll.
Mm-hmm. I like Clay Doll because it had a creepy face.
I hate Clay Doll's design.
It was just like,
I mean, the nicheness. It's simplistic in nature, but it's also the most creepiest.
The giant head I did not like. I thought it was...
A giant head you do not like. You're defending T-Rex.
Yeah, because it was stupid. Also, I was watching Shinkenger at the time, and they had those kind of giant-headed things. Which...
Look at your own head!
But it's got another dimension inside of it. That's why it's big.
You're not a TARDIS. I don't know. I don't know. The animal designs were the ones that suffered for me. Like, I didn't like Smilodon. I kind of like Triceratops because it was a bit more demonic.
I thought that one was a very cool-looking suit.
It was demonic, but it was like, are we trying for the kind of silly we went for T-Rex, or are we trying something monstrous? And it was, I think that was more carried by the fact that when you found out the character story, and then, of course, it was kind of ruined by turning into the big Dopants, which I was not a fan of.
Yeah.
Hang on. You got Anomalocaris, you had T-Rex, you had Triceratops.
Quetzalcoatl.
Was there another big Dopant?
Quetzalcoatl.
That wasn't too bad because it was like a death parrot.
Yeah.
when they grew big, though, I think that was mainly just an excuse to show off the vehicles because they don't really get an awful lot of screen time in the show. Yeah. You would think there'd be like a big part of the series, like, say, the Denliner in Denno.
See, I call that Denliner syndrome. Denliner really sold the idea of, like, we've basically got a train for a mecha. Mm-hmm. And then, like, Kiva tried to continue it on with, oh, we've got a dragon that's a castle and has a windmill attached to it.
Power Ixa!
Why was that even in it? Two episodes.
I'll tell you what, rewinding back to a previous series, and mainly because you brought it up, my main complaint about Kiva is it was trying too hard to sort of mix up a variation of what Denno was doing. I mean, say you had the possessions of the Imogen over to Ryotaro. With Rotaru, it was the possessions of the inhabitants of the castle, and then those gave him his different forms. And I looked at that, and the minute I saw that, it was totally screaming, yeah, they're totally just trying to carry on the Imogens there. And then you had the castle on top of that, the castle dragon thingy. I know one of you guys are going to tell me what it's called.
Castle Doran. Castle Doran! And then Shudoran, who was a windmill.
Oh, Shudoran.
Came out of nowhere. What the hell was the point, Shudoran? Where the hell did that thing come from?
Shudoran and Powered Ixa went off to have a road trip buddy movie.
They went to Denmark to see the other windmills.
But so going back to Double, and yeah, we got the gimmick with the vehicles, but it's actually used rather sparingly. It's not like space. It actually helps fill the storyline for the moment. It's there to sell toys, but it's not in your face every single second episode, if you know what I mean.
For a second, but I think that's something Double did quite well, is that, yeah, we've got a lot of toy gimmicks and stuff, but we're not ramming them down your throat. We're just assuming that you will think you look cool, you will then buy them.
Well, the form changes, right? like those happened a lot, but they were done tactically and like you know, they were done situationally, and they actually turned me from going like, this form change thing is so dumb, to this form change thing is awesome because he's actually using it all the time. And that kind of won me over, that it wasn't just like with Kiva, you know, where it would be like, it's time to be blue because we haven't done blue for a while. It's like, hey, it's a long range guy, trigger. Oh, it's a long range guy who can dodge, Luna trigger. Oh, it's a long range guy with lots of armor, heat trigger. Like, it was really like fast paced almost, and I really dug that. Like, it involved a lot of hammer space in that he just kept kind of going like, hey, I have a memory. But having it be like tactical and used in a bit of a logical way in a fight is what totally swung me to the other side of the teeter-totter, if you will excuse my playground metaphor.
There was only one of those forms which I thought was underused, and in my opinion it was Fang Joker, because they only had it in for a little bit, and then
Extreme. Yeah.
Which was a shame, because they did use Fang Joker again, but I think they should have made
it. It became kind of a joke afterwards, because he'd use Fang Joker would get his arse kicked, and then he'd switch. I think the problem with Fang Joker was the idea behind it. Like, Phillip's not the main fighter, he's not going to be at every fight scene, so we can't do this as much.
Yeah.
Which is a shame, because it is my favorite form, because I think it's the most aesthetically pleasing.
And it has an animal theme, so that's odd.
Now, it's not just... I know full well that everyone who says, oh, we all know why he likes that. Oh, it's an animal, and it's a dinosaur. Oh, it's everyone who... No, it was cool, and he tried to kill people when he was Fangor. I would have loved if he kept that feral side and just went nuts every time he used it. Like, that's why we can't use it much, because Phillip wants to eat your face. anyway, so that... Because I said to myself before we started, we will stay on topic... We're clearly not doing it. to get him out of the way, because I don't like him, Kazu Jun, however you want to pronounce it, Utopia, I was not a fan. I felt he was brought in kind of to keep up the Oh Psychos Got Her Men on the Run kind of thing. And then, he was like, oh, he's in the final episode and he kicks everyone's face in and he sets Axel on fire and all that other stuff. But after all that build up with Terror for literally 46 episodes, this guy shows up and then he doesn't even have that great a fight in the end between him and Extreme. It's just, hi, I'm Extreme, I'm going to kick your face in because this episode isn't about you.
See, this is what brings up my theory that really these three guys were always meant to be intended for one guy. And in order to keep it fresh, they basically split it into three different characters. Because you could have easily just kept it to the one guy. This is the guy that married into the family, and this is the guy that's eventually going to break the family for his own selfish gain. Which would be totally awesome. And I suspect that this Utopia guy was basically the overall end-all and be-all. But I think what they decided to do was make it totally about the Sons of Nazi, well, I can't pronounce that name now, the family, the museum, as it were.
I don't know, I just felt like I was really hoping, my own fanboying, I was hoping Weather would turn out to be the ultimate villain. Like, they were talking about he upgrades himself, and we never really got to see that. I would have liked if he, like, turned around one day and sort of snapped his finger and he had some other power, but anyway.
I was very, very disappointed when he died. Brilliant death. Horrific death. I mean, you're basically eaten alive by your own greed, because let's face it, he put those ports on himself, and he gave himself the ability to have those duplicate ports.
Yeah.
So it's touched by his own petard, his own greed. Mm. But it was too early. It was way, way, way too early. And if that would have been ultimately the way for him to go, and he lasted way through to episode 49...
Mm.
I get that. Mm. But ultimately, I still think that Marwada and Utopia were all originally intended to be like one character.
Mm. Chris, any opinions on Utopia?
Well, on his fight scene, I'm kind of like on both sides of that, because I did think it was kind of short, but at the same time, his fight scene was around about, in terms of just the part of him that was fighting double, it was around about the same as how Terror's fight scene with him went. And, you know, I read a lot of people who were really disappointed in it, but then I thought about it and I was like, I'm kind of two minds, because at the same time, when double kicked both their asses, both times he felt super justified in how he did it to me. So I didn't mind it that much, but, Kazu Jun himself, I kind of got into him after they pulled out the Utopia memory and explained how it works and explained his motivations. It was very rushed, and Kamen Rider does have a thing where they like to introduce the final boss about three episodes before the end. But I was happy that he was at least lingering around the background for a while. And
dropping suitcases willy-nilly.
Yes, I did really enjoy... how, not so much how he as a character acted, but how as a vessel he introduced the notion of Foundation X, like, especially when he said, as Taboo is, like, setting him on fire, he's like, that might have worked if I wasn't also a soldier of Never. And I was like, dude!
Yeah.
They referenced the movie! This dude is kitted out! And I kind of liked his whole motivation that like he's actually he is just a bit of like an emotional deadpan. Like he's a little sociopathic, and he's like this whole time he's like, actually I was kind of in love with Sayako and I want her in my utopia, and then he kills her and he's like, well, looks like I'll be facing utopia alone. And then like I actually really liked his final line when he's kind of like laughing at the count up your sins thing. He's like, is it a sin to love? And I was like, this dude's kind of awesome in that he's like. He's got a lot of really fun villain qualities that I'm not used to seeing in these shows. Just like a guy who does not get into a shouting match, he does not get into an over emotional thing, but he's like got motivations that I do kind of wish were drawn out a bit longer. The revolving door of the psycho boyfriends was kind of odd, but it didn't bother me that much, only because I felt like they went out of their way to set the three of them apart in their own ways. And like Isaka, it did suck that he went that fast, but, you know, as you said, he went fast, but, you know, damn how he went. And and the way he went also, at least, it every time one of them died, it carried on some kind of story point. Like, Kirihiko dying showed you that Sayako is really messed up. And when Isaka died, he, in his last breath, revealed that Shroud was not the benefactor a lot of them seemed to think she was. And then, of course, Kazu-jun dying was mostly to go, like, you know, I have a cool line, FYI, Foundation X is still around somewhere because Stopwatch Lady is not happy with Gaia Memory. She's going to go mess with these metal things.
Was she American?
Yeah, she's actually from an Ultraman show.
Just like I know, like she had an accent.
I'm not sure actually. Sorry if she's American, but she is Caucasian. She's I've looked her up before, but I can't remember now if she's American or if she's European. But she was in an Ultraman show as the token foreigner at some point.
I had to, when I was watching Kuga, I had a moment where I was looking at that. Museum, university guy, and he suddenly went, hang on, you're not Japanese. Have I been watching anime so long? I have, like, there's that joke where he said, oh, you can't tell Asians apart? I can't tell Caucasians apart. Yeah, I don't know what's wrong with it. And then it was like, I was watching her, and it was like, hang on, it's happening again.
She was a little subtler than Jean from Kuga, but, yes.
No, she tends to end every sentence with, hello, I'm speaking English. People don't speak a word.
No!
Language. That's not at all rude.
But Kazu-jun, and mostly as the Utopia dopant, I thought he was okay as a final boss, only because Utopia was such a cool dopant concept that it's like, this is the essence of Utopias. So what it does is it takes everyone's like hopes and dreams and turns them into power. And I was like, it's a neat idea. And the design was, again, like, when you had the psycho boyfriend dopant designs, they were all pretty solid. Like, Utopia is like this half-formed emperor with a cape and a cane. And I was like, I can dig that.
Andy, any opinion on Utopia?
I really, really liked the design and the powers, like Chris was getting into. The ability to turn hope and life against the person who wants to live, surprisingly. I'm surprised they didn't have, like, the token emo person and then use emo person to win in the end. I think that would have been an interesting way of beating him.
Just, like, put IDW Prime in there and, like, I'll drain your... Oh, God, you've got no hopes. You've just got Bumblebee.
Yeah, I thought the cane was a nice idea. It wasn't a sword. It wasn't a normal weapon. It was just a nice walking cane. I was just a little disappointed he didn't use it to walk around with. I think that was nice.
I don't know. I liked it when he's standing there just sort of like, when he's going, that's a gold memory. You're not supposed to have those. You know, supplier's privilege.
Yeah.
Goes into the belt and suddenly, hang on, he's got a stick. Sticks are awesome.
I did also think he pulled off a white suit fantastically.
Yes, mm-hmm. He did look good. I can't complain about the powers, the look of Utopia, or the man's dress sense.
Actually, all of the men in Psycho's life had fabulous dress sense.
And we learned more about Andy than we ever wanted to know.
Oh, well, just think about it. Isaka had a fabulous bowler hat, a white suit for Kazu, and Kirihiko had his lovely necktie, mm-hmm. Neck scarf.
She was basically like, I think a really crap metaphor, Posh Spice, because she basically needed a nice outfit. Yeah, Yeah, I know it's a crap metaphor.
Good places, but it's a good quote to drop. Like Psycho's kind of like Posh Spice, quote unquote. Time Lord, September 1, 2010.
But the point I'm getting at is basically she needs like this sort of powerful man by her side to get what she wants, basically. Which is why she picked the three gentlemen she was with, although in Utopia's case it was more fate, him coming to her rather than her going to him sort of thing. But that is basically her character motive through and through. She's not like Ricardo, where she's basically her person. Basically, yeah, I'll totally manipulate this person to basically take over the family place, the main male figurehead. But it'll totally be me controlling it from my point. She's really manipulative.
Could you say that, though, with Isaka? Because he was definitely wearing the trousers in that relationship. In fact, he may have also been wearing the dress. I think out of the three of them,
she did. There was a little bit of her falling for him there. Pretty much. I'm awed by your power sort of thing. Whereas with NASCAR, that was totally, I'm going to use this big beefy guy to basically replace that figurehead. Well,
beefy.
Necktie wearing, blinking handsome boy. Okay, changing the blinking
beef.
let us drop the cow products for a moment.
That's like calling any of us.
So since we brought her up, let's talk Sonozaki's. And since you brought her up, Psycho, am I wrong in assuming she's a bitch queen from hell? Because although she had some interesting motivation in that my father prefers Wakana and he has a use for Philip or Raito, whichever one you want to call him. But me, I'm basically dead weight. I don't want to do terror yet, but I do have a lot to say on him. But she was basically, he'd kill me as soon as look at me, so I need to just prove myself by being as big a cow as possible. Mm-hmm. And then she just basically, like, her last words are, "I died for my sister." God, that's pathetic.
That was so good, because that capped her off so nicely. It's like, she didn't go through the whole, like, I'm going to redeem myself and save everybody and be a good guy, because she couldn't, especially not after, she basically obliterated Kirihiko and fell in love with a psychotic serial killer. So I like that they didn't fully redeem her, and I like that, she kind of, she was just dead, she was cold, she was the coldest, nasty woman you could ever meet who knows what she wants. But then, at her heart, like, everyone at the end of the day cares about family to some degree. And, like, at the end of the day, she kind of cared for her family, but still, when she dies, she's like, wow, this is a pathetic way to go. Oh, well.
Even in the death scene, she was the coldest there, and Shroud was wearing a mask. Philip, we're dead. We'll see you later, right? When you die, too, we'll see you then. See you later.
Bye. And he die, I mean, if we're honest. But, philosophical musings. Can Philip die? anyone have Matt, Andy, either of you want to say something on Psycho? What an appropriate name when I think about it.
I've pretty much said what I've had to say about her, really. I'm sticking to my guns about her motivations. I agree with everybody. She is a cold bitch. There is no qualms or hesitations about what she is. She is a bitch. And she knows she'll never be like the big figurehead in the family. That's why she needed the bloke to try and replace the father. Mm. So she could then control him by her own wiles, basically. Because that, for her, was going to be the only way she would actually control that family.
The interesting thing about that, as we said earlier on, was that with Isake, kind of turned around and bit her in the arse.
I also find it kind of ironic in a way, but also completely understand that when, and this is spoilers, but we're going to have to talk about it anyway, when Philip's in that sort of afterlife thing, and you can hear ambulances in the background. They're coming for him. In the afterlife bit, right, where Philip is approached by the entire family, as they're about to go, and Rakana basically swaps body's wound so he's able to live on. It's Psycho who's the one who basically comforts her.
Yeah.
Mm.
And that's the irony, but also understandable, because where they couldn't be close in the real world, in the afterlife, they're finally at peace.
Yeah, and part of the symbolism of that scene was also they all kind of reverted back to, they changed from their evil and enigmatic outfits to sort of their old family look. And like before,
Shroud, who has no face.
Yeah, except for Shroud, because she's all messed up. But it's like they went back to before, you know, Wakana became the fated, you know, destined next ruler of Museum and stuff like that. And even though Psycho doesn't really do it in a warm way, she does. Even though she's cold about it, she is still going to comfort her sister because, damn it, it's her sister. And it was a really nice gesture, I thought, that. You know, she's really fun to watch people debate about, because people really want to. I find a lot of people really want to cast her either as pure evil or eventually good, and it's really fun watching people argue with each other, going like, "Well, she did this, yeah, but she did this," and I'm like, you know,
she's just a bitch.
Yeah, she's just you know, regardless of her intentions, she is not a nice person, but sometimes she will still have something good to do. You know.
Yeah.
Andy, I refuse to let you sit quietly in the corner.
Excellent. I think it's interesting that she had the memory of Taboo as well, because, I don't know, maybe you could argue that it is a little taboo for a lady to be that manipulative of her three other halves and to try desperately to murder her sister and eventually succeed her father. It was an interesting choice for her to, I think, have the Taboo memory. It was a cool looking design suit as well. I'm not really sure how that suit related to being taboo.
Flower nipples.
Maybe. Big fallacy lower torso as well, potentially.
Yep.
I don't know.
We're entering a different type of Japanese entertainment here.
We are, but, you know, the two cross over now and again. No, they don't.
Yes, they do.
They do. Well, I'll tell you how, but they do.
Not Itza. Gills. Gills is definitely a...
Don't make me think that about Gil. You know how I feel about Gil.
Tentacles.
But he's Gil. I could see him sort of the angry sex guy, but I can't see him as the tentacle rape guy.
I can see him as the angry sex guy.
I could see Gil's like, you know, he's with his lady friend, and he's just basically like, I must kill something as well as enjoy myself. Like, I have to kill someone. I can't see him with the tentacles afterwards, because that's just mean. Not mean. He just wants to eat his enemies.
You just got to ask the right fanfic guys, and I'm sure they'd tell you a completely different story.
If you ask the right fanfic guys, there's a fanfiction of Margaret Thatcher and Tony Blair. But, anyways, since she came up a few times, Wakana, probably, in my opinion, you were talking about Kamen Rider tropes and, like, pitfalls and whatnot. She was the unexplained change for the sake of plot.
Yeah, it was unfortunate because they got really close to explaining it, and if you really dig, it's kind of explained, but you have to fill in a lot of gaps yourself. Like, between the toxins a Gaia memory releases, between how they twist one's mind to what they're about, and also that weird subplot about Isaka messing with her driver, it's like, the clues were there to lead to her strange character turn, but... they weren't as clearly communicated as I would have preferred from Double. She was kind of pretty, though.
Yes, she was pretty.
She wasn't hot on the eyes.
No, to be fair, Anita was Psycho.
Yes. A lot of cross-media appealed to her as well, because you got to also remember for the early episodes, right up until the big character change, there was also that radio show that was running...
Mm-hmm.
They actually created this radio station, and for the most part, it is like a real proper radio station. But then they also cross reference it as well, and they actually did have that show, Rakana Healing Princess. They did. TV Neon. See, download the episodes of it.
Oh God. I've got an image of, like, some small child sitting at home saying, look, she's real. It's all real. Oh, yeah. I can can be a hero, and then the tragedy ensues.
Yeah, are you telling me it's not real?
No, it's real. It's real. Real. Yeah. There are people using USBs to become superheroes, and there are vampire werewolf people as well who have dragons attached to their wrists. For...
Okay, good, because I do that a lot, and I don't want to think I'm weird at all.
No.
But of course, when we had the big character change, they cancelled the show as well, which kept in with the character development, as sudden as it was. So, yeah, so she became something of a cross-media phenomenon as well. I know I mispronounced that.
That's an English word. You should get that right. Andy, Wakana?
She was my least favourite of the Sonozaki family. I didn't like the whole bit at the start of the series, but I understood where that came from. I'm glad they explained it, but I was pleased when it stopped occurring. And like I say, I really didn't like the design of the clay doll memory. Though I liked the idea of its power of like instant repair and stuff. I thought that was quite cool. Definitely not one of the more favorite characters for me, I'd say, throughout the series.
On the clay doll extreme design, which is basically a giant chess piece.
I basically said I like the simplicity of it. I like how everybody else have got these sort of demonic forms in a way, all these sort of I'll stick to that, these sort of semi-demonic forms. And then you've got Rakana, whose clay doll design is basically that of a piece of clay molded into a doll. It's also due to that simplicity that there's also that little bit of creepiness as well. I kind of like it. I actually like the design for that. You can have complication and you can have simplicity. I think it fell not neatly in the middle there.
Okay, I think we've been holding off long enough. Like, there's one member of the family I think everyone will have something to say about.
The cat?
Yes, Mick. What the hell was going on with Mick?
Amazing idea. It was a wonderful idea. Even if it was a little bit odd, it's like... try to tell me you're in a meeting and someone says, hey, the family has a cat. What if they stick a memory in it and it turns into like a feral dopant? I would be like, you, sir, are hired. And they're like, I outrank you. And I'd be like, you're hired. And then I get kicked out. But
not just that, though. He had his own little belt as well.
Yes.
Yeah. And like, I could just like see him, like, he changed it back to normal. And he, like, there was a scene where he changed back to normal on a bridge.
Yeah.
How did he tell them where he was?
He just picked up the memory in his mouth. Walked off with it.
He's a cat. Clearly, by the end of the show, they've proven he's a bit odd for a cat.
Well,
just a cat.
He was one of those evil cats too, because he's one of those like you know, really well bred fat cats who you just know are pricks in the cat world. And like,
oh, yeah.
And the idea—I mean, what better domesticated animal to make into a villain than a cat? Because what is the most evil pet you can own? A cat. Now, aside from a cat person,
are you?
I'm a cat person, but dude, there are some mean-ass cats. And, like, the only domesticated pet I know of that can be more vindictive than a cat is a parrot. And guess what? They had a parrot dopant, too, in Quetzalcoatl. So...
they were the monster.
Double knows all about pets.
Mick was just... I just sort of go, it's an evil cat. I could, like, he's lord. You could see him, like, after using memory, going into the middle of an alley and like, lording over the other cats. Like, making them dance through the music. And then it turns out, like, he's, like, a top-grade, super-powerful...
assassin.
So fast, try to look like he's standing still guy. And it's like, the cat's the super-assassin!
Yeah, that was...
Does he, like, bring people back to Ryube's feet and just sort of pat them, like, say, have I done a good job? And then, like, the person tries to run away, and then no, you're staying here. It's weird.
I like ultimately how they defeated him in the end as well. Basically, Philip told him it's on.
Do you know what? I will argue that wouldn't work in real life because cats I like cats, but they are a bit bastardy when it comes to. Would you do that for me? No. If that was real life, he'd be like, Mick, sit. No. No, I don't think so.
Well, Mick thought he was going to get his special food, so, you know.
Well,
up until now, Mick was acting like he could do calculus, and he gets tricked into that.
He's still a cat.
Yeah, at the end of the day, I mean, most cat lovers will tell you, cats can be the most selfish, self-centered things in the world. So as soon as he knew it was dinner time, that's it, it's dinner time. Mmm, yum-yums, that's it.
Especially his special dinner. That's all he cared about. I mean, like, that was expensive food. I mean, you know, Ryubei has money, so I bet Mick's special dinner was like hundreds of dollars. So, you know, he'd stop anything for that. You know, he's like my special dinner.
He just fed him people.
People pate.
Well, he could afford to like import poor people from the streets, couldn't he?
Well,
like, oh, you're homeless. Come back with us. We'll something related to food.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, another Mad Dough Pan. Sweet.
Yeah, Sweet was ace.
Sweet was awesome.
Sweet was like, I will. That was like the ultimate. Now, children, don't eat too much or they'll kill you. You know why they'll kill you? Because they will break down the door and kidnap you.
And I love the practical effect of the icing spraying everywhere, because I love that it was practical. So they actually gunked up a double suit with that stuff.
Ugh. Oh god. Anyway, since he came up, and I can't think of anything else funny to say about Sweet or Mick, Ryubei Sunozaki. Now I'm going to say my opinion for last this time, to be fair, and because I've been talking over everyone like a bastard. So Andy, Terror, any opinions?
I really enjoyed the actor who played Terror. He was an interesting guy, because again, he believed he was doing the good of humanity, but obviously was doing it the completely wrong way. And he owned a museum. And how many villains own their own museum? That would be like if Mikey owned a museum.
Oh, that's nice. I want to know why he was finding a T-Rex in Japan. Because, like, he built a museum with, like, all the stuff he found in under his house. And he found a T-Rex. Ryubei Sunozaki has rewritten paleontology as we know it.
I just think it's interesting how everything basically died under his house.
That's because he went back in time and killed it all. But, Matt, or, and, oh, sorry, Andy, anything else?
I like the idea of the terror memory as well. Again, a nice use of an emotion rather than just physical power. Though I was a little confused about where giant Chinese dragon, like, throughout his design from the start, I was like, he looks super stupid with that giant blue head. Oh, it's a giant monster that's in his head that's now eating Axel.
Oh, that was painful.
that looked like it's up.
Yeah, I liked how they actually gave it a reason, and it made him a little bit more terrifying. And I liked blue gunk as well. Not really sure how that translated into terror, but blue gunk is pretty awesome.
Liquid terror.
Yeah.
It's liquid fear.
I bet it tasted of blueberry.
Andy pretty much said the good parts that I enjoyed about Terror, but for the most part with me, I didn't really find him all that interesting. In the long, the whole scheme of things, he wasn't that interesting to me. He was your typical sort of anime villain where, for the most part, he'll just sit in his little fortress or his throne, let all his underdogs and his henchmen do the work for him, and then he'll do like the big fight at the end.
But he's rich. He doesn't need to get his hands dirty.
But that is the exact point, which also leads to why he was also interesting. But I wasn't that bothered about him. I was interested in NASCAR. I was interested in weather. Wasn't too interested with Utopia at that point, because at that moment, we were more concerned of what was going on with Philip and Wakanda, for obvious reasons. So Utopia, for me, was just like another big bad. That's all what I can really say. The actor was good. I will say the actor was very, very good. And apparently he was a very sort of well-respected veteran in the field as well, which kind of helped. I liked the fact that he was basically a Bond villain with his cat and his museum mansion. And, you know, here's my giant laser, you know.
All I wanted was sharks with freaking lasers on their heads.
Yeah, basically. I loved that bit. But in the grand scheme of things, It wasn't that interested. I was more interested in the henchmen.
Number two, do you have any opinions on number two? You're number two, by the way, Chris.
Does that make me number one?
A lovely character for me. Lovely character. I liked him a lot. I really like elderly Japanese men who laugh.
Wow. Yeah, awesome laugh.
Now we know why he goes to Japan.
I liked that. I liked that every single time he ever appeared, 99% of the time when someone spoke to him, he'd reply by first going, and then like start to do a line after that. It was amazing. And he was not on screen as much as I would have liked, despite being on screen a lot, but only because I found his motivation when they got to the end of his arc to be remarkably stunning to me. I really liked the idea of a dude who has gone so mad from the dopant toxins and the... Because even though they had the drivers, I think it was implied that they were all getting very screwed up by their dopant use. And that, like, the guy basically went like, alright, I'm gonna ruin my entire family for this Gaia Impact, so in order to redeem myself, I'm gonna put my family into the Demon's Tail, because that's where they'll really live this whole time. And, I kind of, like, it was a bit of a weird, sort of out-of-nowhere thing, but I like the idea that he was so screwed up, he's like, he's justifying everything he's doing because his old family lives on in a brush that he found. And
when you think about it, really, you have to laugh.
Well, I mean, yeah, this whole thing, because it's some artifact, and in legend, you know, it's the tale of a demon, and you can bind souls into it, so he's like, I'm going to bind my family. Like it. And what I liked is they never implied in any way that it even worked. It's just that he was getting so psychotic once he lost Philip to that Gaia memory well and stuff like that. He's like, I'm going to put my family in this brush and become the king of terror. And then I adored his death scene when he goes into the burning mansion and then, like, you know, breaks. And he's like, this is when he starts dancing with his phantom wife and the place is burning down around him. I'm like, that's a glorious way for this character to go. And of course, laughing his particular laugh the whole time. I was so into that. Like that, I rewatched that sequence a few times because I was like, it has been so long since I've seen a Kamen Rider villain go out this gloriously. And he also represented something I really liked come the start of the show, which was that this was a Kamen Rider show with a group of antagonists. It's the Sonozaki family. They are the ones supplying the dopants, and I'm not used to a Kamen Rider show that has a clearly defined group of antagonists that early on. A lot of Kamen Rider shows tend to have, like, either creatures or at least a mystery that appears to be creatures for a really long time, and Double kind of forewent all that, and if that's a word, and just jumped right into it and said, here, these guys supply the dopants. The dopants are these, and these are their suppliers. Go. And I really liked that. So I like what he represents overall, even if I wish he'd had a bit more time to show us some of that backstory, because that really got me more into him when they brought that stuff up.
I have to echo a lot of what you said, which is evil, evil laugh, and mine is an evil laugh. But I really, that's getting creepy. I really, really liked him. You were talking about him not getting a lot of screen time, or not as much. I think that played to his benefit, because I do, as much fun as it is in Western shows to have a villain show up all the time and give him loads and loads of character development, blah, 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 to use the Transformers reference, which I think we'll all get, you do risk the G1 Megatron syndrome.
What's Transformers?
Where they show up, they get beaten up, and they sort of... These are robots that turn into things like guns and sex toys. Don't tell me there wasn't a Transformer that just sort of looked at themselves one day and, you know, I could be something really disgusting.
Get on top of me, Decepticon! I had 4 hours of sleep, FYI.
That is no excuse for vulgarity. I do like the way in Japanese fiction the villain is a villain, because when he shows up, all hell is going to break loose. It was fantastic that he was introduced very early on. He was basically first episode, this is the main villain. and for the next 46 episodes, he was the main villain. That's kind of part of the reason I actually don't like Utopia, because he felt a bit chewed in there, like, oh crap, we need to finish Philip's story. So we need this mega villain, oh crap, we've already beaten Terror. But, I mean, the character development him was genuinely fantastic. And the fact he, if you actually added up the amount of time he spent as Terror, you might get 20 or 30 minutes out of him.
Mm-hmm.
I love that, because, like, it was, if he uses that thing, we are all going to die. I mean, Matt, you were saying, like, he showed up early on and didn't do much. Considering what happened when he did things, I'm guessing that if he'd done anything at the start of the show, made Decade the blackest Kamen Rider series of all time.
Well, yeah. I actually agree with you about, like, about the use of the Dope Hunt memory, or the Terror memory, because it definitely did make Terror a legit threat whenever you did see it come out.
Especially the subtlety when he basically affected Shodaro.
Yeah, I love that.
I will admit, that was done extremely well, and it's a credit to the guy who plays Shodaro that he played his end really, really well.
Mm, it's just like when he came out and said, you know what, you've known about me for months, we've been at this for close on a year, you haven't even tried to come after me. Do you know why? Because subconsciously, you've seen me in my Terror form enough times that your body is scared of me. And like just when like Shoto was going to go up to him, and then his eyes just flash and he just starts shaking. And it's that's what's so great about the Terror memory. It's not that it's super powerful and all that. It's that it hits you without having to hit you, if you get me.
Don't get me wrong about my judgment of him, though, because you've all made really points. He is a very good character, and the actor who plays him is good, and the subtlety in it is good. I mean, the main comparison I give is he's the same as an anime villain, and most good anime villains really don't do that much in the whole series. It was just that, personally for me, I was more interested in the storylines with Nazca and Weber.
I have to admit, now that you mentioned it, I was kind of expecting Weber to take, like, he'd use some combination of memories, give himself a super Weather form, and then take over. I was expecting that, so I fully understand what you mean, like, Weather may have been ultimately more interesting, or Nazca may have been ultimately more interesting.
Yeah.
For me, I am glad he stayed as the big boss. I preferred Weather was around for a bit more, and I think it was basically, like, we need to make Extreme look as cool as possible. Ooh, here's that guy who's been beating the crap out of everyone. But I will say the Devil's Tale. Was it Devil's or Demon's?
Devil's Tale.
I love this, because that was when it hit you. That when you went, he is so far gone. Because like, everyone was going, he favors Wakana. You did get the feeling that if it came down to it, he'd have sacrificed her as easily. But because he was still the father, and he still loved, in inverted commas, his family, he needed his family to survive. So he placed, I'm not sacrificing my real daughter, because what really matters about my daughter Wakana, or my daughter Psycho, or my wife, or my son, they're in here, in this brush.
Yeah.
It was just like, he is so far gone. I would have loved if we saw a bit more of that crazy.
There's one other scene, I would say, right at the start when they let Kirihiko into the family, and he has to be initiated.
And
everyone's like, it's fine.
Yeah, just, you do realize you may die. Yes, but I'm your favorite son-in-law. No, I'm using you pretty much as a battery pack.
Yeah.
But I love them. And the death scene, Chris, you were talking about death. It was, everything's falling apart. Oh, no, wait. There's my daughter. Everything's working out fine. And my wife isn't hideously scarred anymore and is willing to talk to me again without a lawyer in the room. Oh, it's wonderful. Oh, building falls down in him. And then at the end when he's when they're all together, you notice he didn't really seem any different. It wasn't like he was like, now I am at peace. And I am like, he was just sort of like, hi, I'm dead. I'm still crazy. But, and I will say something that you mentioned, the laughing. The best thing about the laughing was that he did it every time he transformed. Yes. And it was just like, he'd start off in his own voice, and then you'd have like the dopant slightly pitched was a bit lower, and it'd be like, ha 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 ha, oh crap, we're all gonna die.
I wanted to throw in something, I'm Skype lagging here.
Go ahead, I was just saying they're fantastic, and I would have their babies if that was physically possible.
Excellent.
Tiny little weather terror babies, oh.
I wanted to throw in that whole bit about the thing of, like, you know, you've known about me for this long, and the reason why you haven't come after me is because you're terrified. I adored when they brought that up, because I honestly was accepting that they were just going to run with the unspoken thing of the heroes aren't just going to go to the mansion and knock on the door and say, hey, guys, what in the hell are you doing? And then the fact that they went to the lengths of having that explanation for it, I was like, I love this show, because this show keeps on just, like, every time there's a big enough hole for me to go, like, maybe they're just not going to talk about it. Usually, it'll at some point go, like, oh, by the way, you know that hole you thought that we forgot about? Cement! Oh, wow! Hey, guess what? We just covered it. And I was like, whoa. You know, like, even if it's kind of loose, like, the terror thing is, you know, if it's, even if on a hypercritical level, one could say it's a bit flimsy, the fact they even did it is, it speaks volumes to me in this genre.
And just like you were saying, like there are theories like with Kamen Rider, like, oh, here's the bad guy. You know exactly where he is. You know all his weaknesses, and you have a fair chance of taking him. We're gonna wait until he's more powerful.
At the
end of Kuga, it was like he was fighting N Dagarov.
N Dagavazeba. Don't ask me why I remember that.
Yeah, Dagavazeba, and like it had like the 5 second, this is Amazing Mighty fighting him, and you just see, like, all you basically see is Amazing Mighty's hand, and then, oh, the fight happened off screen. He says, well, he gave me a favor of letting me become more powerful, so I'll let him become more powerful. That was stupid. And then, as much as I love Ultimate Form in that series, and I emphasize that sentence, how much I love Ultimate Form in that series, I will not discuss the other. I have to admit, like, it was like, oh, we need to be more powerful. I'm more powerful now. I could just, you know, it was just so I can be ultimate. And there was nothing like that in Double. It was a villain. You're not going to deal with the villain. Why? Because you can't deal with the villain right now. Why are you more powerful? Why is the villain more powerful? Because this, and this.
Yeah, yeah.
Excellent. It's not force fed to either. It's not like, you will know every nook and cranny of this series. And you will learn things that no one ever needed to know. And it's not, to use another example, Kiva, where a million things happened and you never explained it. Like, why was Kiva there in the first place?
Or how is it in Kiva everyone always stumbles across each other, usually near water?
Yes! Why are they all in... Do these people all, like, oh, I'm going to wander over here now. Really? Text me your GPS.
Well, it's like they don't need phones. All they have to do is get mad at each other and start wandering around. Eventually, they'll happen across each other, and then they'll fight. And it all turns out well in the end.
Yeah. Because, you know, they'll fight at the end. We were trying to kill each other 5 seconds ago, but I love you now.
Oh, Fives was awesome, and, too.
Wait, we'll hit each other anyway.
But my favorite thing in Fives is if you see an Orphanok, you pick up your phone, you go, Takumi, it's an Orphanok! And 5 seconds later, he gets there just in time for a civilian to die before he transforms.
It's like he was standing behind the corner. We're like, no, wait, we need one body count. But all in all, I'll go through the trivia. Villains in Double. I have a feeling I know the answer to this, but a success or a failure? We'll go from left to right in my little screen here. So, Andy.
In terms of what?
In terms of being villains. Because I do think that, like, a villain makes series. As good as a hero is, they're no good if there's not a good bad guy. So.
Are we comparing these to other villains from other Kamen Rider series, or just on its own merits as being a villain?
Whatever floats your boat.
Okay, I would say the villains are very, very entertaining to watch. And I like the idea that they are rich and powerful, built upon the money of drugs and drug distribution and drug making as well. I thought that was a nice idea. And an interesting way how they got memories from a big green pool underneath their house. I liked it. And they had a really cool house as well. And maids as well. Because, you know, it's not Japan without a couple of maids.
No. Or a butler, if it's black butler.
Ah, they don't.
Matt, villains, yay or nay?
I'm pretty much on a yay on this, mostly because this is my first... it's my second Kamen Rider that I stuck through, but let's just say for the sake of argument, my first proper Kamen Rider through, because let's face it, Decade was mainly an anniversary / celebration show, whereas Double is Kamen Rider proper all the way through. As my first proper experience villains compared to, say, the now attackies of the previous series, I think they have the full potential.
I want them to do an add-on to Decade. What the hell was going on with Narutaki, the 30-minute explanation?
Yeah, we need that, really, because he was all over the place. I mean, he was just there just to blame Blinky and Suzuka for everything, basically.
He was there to show up and just go, Decade, you will destroy our world!
This is the part where we all dropped out. I'm going to keep recording, because that's what I do. I'm keeping the recording running. And I'm going to be talking through this part entirely to entertain you, Matt. So, let's see. What can I do here? What if I play this a few times, actually? Oh, no, wait. I put the stopper in. Hang on. Actually, here, I'll give you some mood music. Wait a second. What's this?
Hello.
Hello.
Hello. Long time no see.
I kept talking the whole time.
Excellent.
I was gonna play some music for Matt entirely just for Matt because he's the only one who's gonna hear it. I was just gonna keep this running the whole time, but I'll stop.
Oh God. Where were we anyway? We were complaining about Narutaki.
Yes, you were doing the villain run around, and then you guys got into Narutaki, and then all went silent.
Okay, Matt, quickly, summation. Villains, yay.
Going back to the villains, because, damn it, we've talked enough about Narutaki. I think they've reached their full potential. Good villain, good henchman. Very interesting story between the family, a very family feel. Rich bastards. I'm jealous. They got a giant house. I think, mostly because I could really laugh and say that the dad was basically a Bond villain with cool superpowers.
Chris, villain Dierre now.
Absolute yay. I liked that the higher level villains all had motivations I can understand. Ryubei had the ultimate villain motivation that it's my personal favorite, which is everything I'm doing is to better mankind, and you're all going to like me for what I'm doing in the bigger picture. The monster of the week villains I like because they all had a motivation you could cite, even if it was a really, really shallow one, like, I hate this guy, so I'm going to burn his building down. It was still a motivation, and I also loved that there were faceless grunts in the form of the masqueraders.
Since you brought them up, you were mentioning, like, oh, no one, the death count, you know, people die for a reason. You ever notice that the masquerades got slaughtered?
They were, I think, like, they were the one exception in that they were the shocker grunts of the series. There's a lot of speculation as to what exactly the masquerade memory does to you. Like, I mean, it gives you a mask, but it also seems to cause your body to just lose all cohesion, so it's like when you get struck hard enough, you just disintegrate. And I'm like, I suspect maybe it's just like the masquerade memories were some mass-produced experimental dopant memory that literally would, like, obliterate your bodily cohesion, so you'd become powerful, but you also would just, you know, you'd burst into flames and a puff of smoke if you got hit hard enough with a kaboom or something like that. So, I mean, they were a very strange thing in terms of how they seemed to actually die all the time. But also, just the fact that no one ever brought it up, I thought was kind of funny.
There was like a 5-minute extra at the end of an episode, like Philip and Shoto just sort of having horrible guilt attacks. We killed all of them. Yes, Their wives will never see them again.
Yeah, having to like have a line of people outside of their office saying, "Sorry, we have killed your husband. Sorry."
I think it's accepted that a man who uses a masquerade memory probably has no family and no redeeming features.
You don't know that.
I'm gonna drop the hammer here.
He can work for charities. Small baby children puppy charities.
All you nasty communist criminal drug-using stoners who use masquerade memories have no redeeming qualities and no loving families. I could kill you and not even feel a pang of guilt. Ha!
Sounds like the Republican Party recruitment video, to use a funny American joke.
I'm not American.
Oh, no. I know you're not American, but I'm just thinking, like, this sounds like something you see on TV. I didn't forget, I just didn't care.
Come from that same place.
To be fair, I probably get, are you American, more than you do.
That's true, actually. I've been accused of being British many times.
Yeah, I've been accused of being American. Like, I went in to buy a phone and they said, "What part of America are you from?" And then, "Oh, I'm sorry, what part of Canada are you from?" So, I am all things to all men.
Your mistake, Mikey, is where you've been saying "eh" a lot.
Eh. Eh. So, not to sound at all racist, eh? Terrible. Right, we've done the villains, and we all seem rather pleased. But, you know, they weren't given the most airtime. So, shall we do the writers? And I think I can... I was going to do this separately, but I'd like to get him out of the way, because he's not one you can't say much on, but he's one I think everyone will have something to say. Kamen Rider Skull, Narumi Sokichi, the man with the funny hat. Whoever wants to go first, he was a man.
He was a real man, and he had a hat.
Yep. Care to build on that? what do you think of the man in the hat? Sorry, go, Matt, go. I don't care.
You get it out of you first, Matt, otherwise you'll...
I'll get it out of my system. If he was just kept as this background character and then just kept him steep in the mystery, that would be pretty cool. Because it's like one of those enigmas that will still be niggling in your mind, but still kind of cool at the same time to keep the mystery alive. The fact that we basically got his full backstory and resolution in Begins Night, I'm not too bad about that. Because, yeah, okay, the mystery was broken, but also, it gave you like a glimpse about how cool this guy was as well. But there's still a hell of a lot of questions raised as a consequence of Begins Night. How the hell was he able to access the world's library? For instance, where did he get the skull memory from? You know, all this other stuff. I mean, did he get it from Shroud?
I did some reading on that on one of the wikis. I don't know if it was Wikipedia or the Kamen Rider wiki. Apparently, it's like it's one of those expanded universe things that they didn't include in the show, but it's canon that he used to work for the Sunazakis, and he stole the lost driver. And it's basically, he takes memory related cases because he feels guilty about his involvement, and he's the one who has the Revolve Gary. It was designed for him originally.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like... But I mean, anyway, go. That was me rambling.
That's actually quite interesting. So, my mind is, if it was kept a mystery, then I'd be up for that. It wouldn't be bad, and it'd still be one of those things that keeps you interested all the way through. But at the same time, the fact that his storyline was basically told takes nothing away either. Obviously, it gives, because it tells you what he basically was, what he did, yada, yada, yada. But it still kept that intrigue alive. And the final resolution with the alternate skull with Shotaro gave that bit of closure straight off the bat. Ultimately, though, he was an awesome character. He wore a hat, and he was a man's man.
I like them. I might as well get my opinion. I really enjoyed him. It was good that he wasn't, you know, every 5 seconds that they referenced him. He was a bit of a background character, but he was, you know, one of those background characters whose presence is always felt without him needing to be brought up every 5 seconds. I enjoyed his portrayal in Begins Night. The actor certainly got across. He was the stereotypical hard-boiled detective. He was like the guy you'd find in the novel. You know, he said, like, you wear the hat to hide your soft side. And, you know, there was that episode where they introduced Extreme, where he went out of his way to be pragmatic but kind. I really enjoyed that. And it's like, he can, like, I love the idea, he can judge your entire character by how your hat looks on your head. That is a man you can respect. Your hat is tilted at the wrong angle, you've killed babies. That's a guy I can get behind. But Skull, I love the Skull was a rather simplistic design, but I really liked it, and it was just like, I found it really weird. He's like referred to in a lot of material as the movie villain writer. I can't think of him like that because he was entirely heroic to me. It was the dummy dopant pretending to be the death dopant who apparently Skull killed at some point, or beat, or whatever. And it was, he likes... Hmm?
The whole publicity was the red herring. We were supposed to be led to believe that this guy was going to be ultimately an arsehole.
Yeah, but he was just like, he was actually probably the kindest character you saw next to Shotaro. And he was just really well developed and really well portrayed. And it doesn't hurt that every time he walked onto a screen, and every time he said a word, every bit of testosterone in your body goes, yes, he will lead us to the promised land. But plus I would really recommend watching the Nobody's Perfect music video. Because that is an actual story. And he took on terror. And he was like, oh, God, if that's considered canon, and it really should be, it is awesome because Skull is awesome. And he saved a little girl, and Shotaro was actually useful for once in those days. And he's like holding the hand up as it's raining and the hat, and you're going, give him his show. Alternate Skull, the series, give this to me. It's like, he doesn't have to say anything. He can just stand there. And people will explode. Because they'll just go like, he's a man!
I don't really relish your chances all this talk about testosterone, and then if his presence makes people explode, Mikey.
Women become pregnant by passing him in the street. you know, he just sort of tilts the hat at them, and suddenly, boom, babies shoot out everywhere. I'm not remotely funny. Andy.
There is no hiding the fact that I am a fan of these kind of characters. Like, for me, the best bit in Kamen Rider Decade was Minami Kotaro, who was very similar in the way he acted to Skull in this.
A man. Look, two of me.
Yes. Oh, that was epic. The two.
Jai D. Another message to Jai. You're a bad person.
Yeah,
he is.
He hates. He doesn't get that scene. He doesn't get the appeal.
He's just wrong. He's broken.
Oh man. Oh man.
This is an intervention. Watch Double. And please watch the Black episodes of Decade, because even I can't complain about those, because these are men.
Man. It doesn't make much
sense. When he was just, like, squeezing the fists, just as he's about to transform, and he's just like, oh, and then, like, they look at each other, and they move in complete unison.
I remember a conversation, actually, when Jai actually watched those Black/Black RX episodes, and he actually asked me what the heck the significance was behind what he was doing as well. And I was like, what do you mean by significance? It was just awesome.
It's not significant, it's men. Remember a few days ago I just said men every 5 seconds?
Yes.
Men.
Good man.
Men.
Mm.
And apparently someone's moaning, so go on.
I like the fact that they used
Skull as basically the deceased mentor character, because he was, I would say he was key for Shotaro's development throughout the entire show, because he was always looking up and trying to be his master, well, not his master, but, you know, Skull's equal, and he finally accomplished that at the end because of all of the things he had learned. And this guy was just all kinds of cool. Like you said, he was kind on a manly level, on an epically manly level. I don't know, everything about him was cool. I like the fact as well that it was basically the double suit, but with a really awesome mask, hat, and scarf. I like the fact that it had a scarf as well, because I kind of look at that, and it's a nice nod potentially to the Kamen Riders of old. And yes, the whole look, it's Michael Jackson for Jai, I guess, stands. He kicked a dude out of midair.
Yeah, and then he did it.
Yeah, which was awesome. He also wore a suit fantastically as well.
Yeah. He wore it better than anyone else.
Oh, totally.
And it was like, don't watch yourself, lady. And it was like, oh.
Yeah.
But anyway, no, Matt, let's be fair. We've all had a turn. Chris, would you like a turn?
I would like a turn.
Well, you can have one.
Okay, so Skull, right? I always have this funny thing with Skull, because he's so blatantly designed to be the absolute coolest character you've ever seen, and you want to love him. And I always, somewhere deep inside myself, kind of go like, should I try to be the cynic who thinks Skull isn't cool? And it's like, no, you can't, because Skull is bloody awesome, and they've made him to be bloody awesome. He's barely in the show. It's true. There's Boba Fett syndrome going on there. But, as you guys said, he accomplishes everything he needs to do in his short time. And he is an enigmatic presence. He's a lingering presence even when he's not there. Also, he's a Skullman reference, and that really tickles my bones. Skullman is the original series that Ishinomori created before he made Kamen Rider, so there's some homaging there. But the actor, I think one reason why the actor didn't appear too much is because he is a singer, and to do a tokusatsu show, if you do it regularly, is a huge block out of your schedule. Like, if you've seen Kabuto, you may have noticed that Kamen Rider Drake is not in the show all that often, despite being pretty heavily featured, and that's because he is actually a male model and couldn't commit the time to be in the show every week. So I'm sure that the guy who plays Narumi Sokichi likes to appear when he does, but probably has some kind of schedule as a singer that prevents him from being able to commit to the whole thing. Although, did you guys hear any... I heard an interesting tidbit about the upcoming Movie War 2011, and they've got him back for something, and apparently they may do some stuff with a flashback sequence again with his character, and maybe we'll get some more delicious Narumi Sokichi manliness. But the design and everything about him was... Or pardon?
In an episode, like, now we're all going, like, Axel will get beaten up, Ultimate Skull shows up, everyone's happy. I apologize to Matt for earlier on as well.
I also want to point out, his belt is called the Lost Driver, and I thought about it for a while, and I realized it's probably called Lost because when you take half of a double driver out, you get a sideways L.
Dear God, you're right.
It seemed like the most logical reason to call it the Lost Driver, because it's not really lost if he hasn't. And then by the end of Double, there are three people who have had Lost Drivers, so it's not lost anymore. And
they're back everywhere. Matt, I very rudely shouted over you earlier.
No. I was going to say, just to add to what everybody said, Skull is basically a symbol of every good character ever created by the likes of Chandler and Mickey Spillane, and dreamt up by some Japanese guy in his office, and he did a good job. That's basically it. That guy is the living embodiment of basically all of those, quotation fingers, hard-boiled detectives, and that is pretty much awesome.
Mm. I wish I had more to say, but I think that's pretty much all you can say about Skull. If you complain about anything about Double, you cannot complain about Skull. Because you're a bad person if you do. And you're mocking the dead as well, which is never nice.
Well, okay, here, I'll be the guy. Okay, if you watch when he transforms, especially in the Nobody's Perfect video, his hat grows when he transforms so it can fit over top of his helmet.
Like is that the only problem?
If you stare at the hat, it actually increases in size when he transforms. So there you go.
There are people who complain about
that. That hat doesn't need to be made. Maybe it's made out of a stretchy material.
It's made out of Gaia memories.
Maybe some people are just too desperate to find something wrong with Skull.
I just wanted to throw them a bone, you know? Like, if you really want to find something to come down on Skull for, dude, his hat grows, and darn it, that's a plot hole. So, there you go.
All right. Apparently, Evangelist has given you something. I hope you feel fulfilled.
I know I do.
I still want to buy that hat. I've actually found a hat shop that's open after opening up here as well. So,
of course,
and they might have the hat. And if they do, I'm getting one, and no one else can have one. Axel. I want to talk about Axel because from what I've seen, that not many people seem to like him online. Like, Hench and Justice, I was checking out, there was a lot of, oh, I don't like Axel. The guy who uploads the Double videos on YouTube, one of his comments was, you know, I really hate Axel, but this scene is cool. I was listening to your podcast on HJU, and it was one of the people said, oh, I hate Axel. Why the Axel hate? I love Axel.
I've been considering that, and I think that a lot of people could hate Axel if they didn't watch him after his opening appearances, but...
even then, he's more approachable than most secondary writers are.
Yeah, and his growth as a character, in my opinion, was way better than a lot of secondary writers, so I'm with you, I don't see where a lot of the Axel hate comes from other than, like, oh, he was mean to a character I like, and I'm like, well, yeah, but... their relationship changed as time went on.
I did love him. I really liked, you were saying, like, he developed. He really and it wasn't the slow episode 40, they're kind of on speaking terms developed. No, by episode 28, they were an extended family.
Yeah.
And he was brought in, it was like, I don't like you. I don't like this city. I kind of like you. Oh, I'm putting up with you. Oh my God, I've realized I started talking with you. We're actually very close. And then for the rest of it, it's like he gets some really good scenes and just really nice development. I love the fact that once they hit the spot with Asaka, it wasn't like what they'd usually do. It was, oh, he hit the spot where he'd realized that his revenge isn't everything. Next episode, oh, I hate you. No, it's, I've learned something. Moving on.
Yeah.
And then... he also had some very funny moments, which was very bizarre to me, because I didn't expect them to pull him as a comedy character at any point. And it was just like that one where they introduced Playdoll Extreme, and it's like, kiss the girl, and he just sort of looks away and goes, despair is awaiting me at the finish line, and he runs off. And at the end he comes back and he just says, what are you doing? Do not question me. I've watched every kissing scene ever written. And he just grabs Akiko. And then he grabs Shoujiro. I think the best scene for him, just see how far he developed from the guy we saw in episode 19, was the very last scene he had in episode 49, where it's like he's after having his thing with Akiko in was it 47, where he said, if anything happens, stay close to me, and they're standing there and she's laughing and he's got his arms folded but he's grinning away and he's not looking and he looks really, really happy, and she just hugs him. And he's just still, oh, I'm happy, but I'm still not laughing. And I love him. I love him to death. And I love the Axel design. I didn't like at first, but now I love it. And it's the exact same thing with all the Double designs. I didn't like him at first, and except for Fang Joker, which I loved from the start. But they all grew on me.
Well, that's also the strength of the show, is, like, with Kamen Rider, if a design is questionable, usually it'll grow on you if the character who it's put onto is good enough, and that's one of the strengths I find of Kamen Rider, is it can take something that you look at and go like, ah, what is this, and then you see the character in action and you go like, okay, that's a really cool character, screw my qualms about the suit, that guy is awesome. And then it's funny how it works, like the character can take away that visual apprehension you might have.
Anyway, that's all I have to say for Axel at this point in time. I have a few other things I have planned to say, but I'll leave that for a bit. Matt, and this time I promise I won't talk over you.
That's all right. There's not an awful lot I can really add to that. I think an awful lot of what people sort of dislike with him is he's your typical secondary rider that has that sort of either the anger or the revenge kick, or in the other case, because there have always been a few other secondary riders where they've got this sort of disliking for the other rider. In this case, it was Shotaro's love for the city and Tarai's hate for the city, which may or may not have basically cast him as a one-dimensional character. However, I argue that fact because I believe there was an awful lot of growth in that character in the episodes he was given. We basically had this guy so full of hate, so full of revenge, and then a lot of that is rectified, and he learns that the revenge can only get him so far. And he basically learns to basically embrace the city and embrace the people in it by the end of it. Okay, he doesn't say, I love this town or anything like that. But you could tell that this was a very different character than what we began with. That's all I can really say about him. I didn't really like the whole I transform into a bike motive. He's basically a transformer. And I'm not exactly all that great about his costume either. But the character in and himself wins it over, like Chris says.
Andy, do you have any strong or weak opinions on Terry Lee Ryu?
I liked the design of the costume. I thought it was awesome. Him transforming into a motorbike, I was like, yes! Because he kind of transformed a little bit like Psy-Kill, I thought. Which, to me, made him even more awesome.
So you turned Axel into a GoBot.
There's a Japanese customizer who actually made an incredible Psy-Kill custom out of the transforming Axel
toy. Oh, no way!
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, man! I would like to see that. I think that would be awesome.
Oh, my God.
I think that is all kinds of cool. The only problem I have with the design of Axel is it's more the redesign they did for him for the SH figure, because I think someone was saying, oh, he's way too bulky, so they made him slender. Now people are like, he's way too slender. And I don't know. That kind of annoyed me. And I will say that this guy's family died quite horrifically in front of his eyes.
Yes.
To an ice cream cone and then shattering in front of his eyes.
They shattered while they were talking to him.
Yeah.
Oh, God. And his little sister was in there as well.
Yeah. I did laugh because I'm cruel and mean, but
you're just like, Saka, you funny guy.
Glorious. Do it more. But no, I liked it. And like you said, he had really good character development. I liked his little phrase of, don't ask me questions, which was kind of weird since he's a policeman, so people will be asking him questions generally, like, how's the investigation going? Don't ask me that. Okay. Would you like some tea? Hey, don't ask me questions. I'll get tea if I want to get some tea. And the way I looked at it by the end, I looked at it like Batman and Commissioner Gordon, but Commissioner Gordon can transform into a motorbike. Because it was the vigilante detective and the police, the head of the police. That's where.
Hang on. Wouldn't the police in this case be more the vigilante? Because he tried to kill someone out of revenge?
No, that's just a law taking it.
No. Isaka killed his parents behind a movie theater, and he put on the cowl of Axel, and now hangs out with small boys in dark caves.
Shut up, just think about Commie Gordon turning into a motorbike.
Commie Gordon? And we will raise the communist DC Universe Empire. And everyone will be equal and all give me their grain.
Come here, Gordon.
You've got to remember, Mikey, that this is basically the police force of the Kamen Rider universe. You tell me of any police precinct in that universe that's always had one character that's been in it for himself.
You tell me of any police precinct in that universe that's ever been affected.
To be fair, but before Terry you came in, their police force wasn't what you call the best.
To be fair, the police force of Kuga's plan was Quick, how do we get him to lead them to a far so that when he kicks them, they don't explode and kill everyone within 100 miles?
That's still more than most Kamen Rider police forces do, because usually if they're in the show, they're opposing the good guys because they're part of the problem.
G-Tree. Police Rider.
Well, those guys were supposed to be the same police force from Kuga, so, you know, it's all carryover.
Same universe.
Well, I mean, some people will start arguing with us if we actually say it's the same universe, but I think it's the same universe.
It's the same universe. They reference Kuga, unknown. Get angry. They specifically reference Kuga.
Because some people start going like, yeah, but Agito's in 2001 and Kuga was in 2000, but Agito said it was 2 years later, so that's a time paradox. And I'm always going like, but that's the difference of 1 year.
I'm the Lord of Time, and I say, fudge it!
No, swear away, I'm in charge, swear away.
No, he wants us to fudge the figures, is what he means.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
Fudge is good enough.
Yeah.
Right, I believe, I was going to skip ahead there, but I forgot you, Evangelist.
Everyone forgets me. I have a bunch I want to say about Terui as a character, but I want to quickly touch on the suit. Oddly enough, the figure art is one thing that really won me over on the suit when I got to look at it in hand, and the suit is, you don't notice it at first, it's covered in the letter A.
Really?
He has the letter A on the front of his visor, and you know that curvy thing that sticks off his forehead? If you look at it from the side, it's a curved A. And the things down the side...
I noticed that... What was the one where he like trial and I am not Kamen Rider Double, I am Kamen Rider X, or just something, and he's got an A on the side of his head.
Yeah, and he has A's on the sides of his thighs too, to a degree. Really stylized A's. But
I have not noticed.
I'm also kind of like Andy. I immediately got won over by him bending over into a motorcycle only because of how straight faced they did it in the show. Where they didn't make anything of it. Just literally when the Ice Age Dopant is running away, he's just like, well, guess what, now I'm a bike, and he just chases after him. I'm like, alright, wicked. He's got thrusters on the back of his shins, I can deal with it. But as a character, what I really liked about him is, and this kind of goes into my whole rider tropes thing, is he actually broke a lot of secondary rider tropes that and secondary rider tropes are my least favorite ones, because usually, here's the thing, a secondary rider I find often falls into one of two categories. They're either a total sidekick or they're way the hell too antagonistic to the primary characters. And usually, like as for an example of antagonistic guys, like Ixa or Kaiza from Fize. And those two are also examples of where I don't really like it going sometimes. Like, I don't mind it when it goes those places, but, like, Kaiza, for instance, the way his character progressed is, no matter what happened, he was almost to ludicrous degrees, ready to murder the main cast, because he's not a nice guy. And in the case of Ixa didn't go this far, but and I guess there's characters in Blade who'd be better examples of this, but you'll get a secondary rider who's antagonistic, and then the way he grows is either he like Kaiza, he gets even more antagonistic, or like to a degree Ixa or some of the Blade guys, he becomes a bit of a sidekick. And what I liked about Axel is he was antagonistic at the front. He wasn't antagonistic the whole way through, but he also didn't become a sidekick. He stayed very much his own entity. And I really enjoyed that about his character progression. Also, I liked that they gave him Kamen Rider V3's origin, in that his family and little sister were killed by the evil organization. That was neat. V3 is a classic 70s rider. And his theme song actually has a line sung in a really pleasant 70s way, saying that my family and little sister are dead. But that's,
I like that. A very pleasant way of saying that. They're dead, but they're gone.
Yeah, he's like, my father, my mother, and my little sister, too. They were killed. And it's like, whoa. But I really liked Ryu as a character, because he started off, and I think one reason why a lot of people give him flack is because a lot of people, when they watch enough rider shows, they get kind of annoyed by the antagonistic secondary rider character. And I thought that he actually broke out of that mold really well and really fast, and was a great presence in the show. And I also really liked the fact that he had a romance with Akiko that was not completely overdone, cheesified, and thrown in your face. Like, it was practically off-screen. It's just like, by the end of it, it's like, hey, by the way, just so you know, they seem to kind of be getting along very well. but they aren't making a huge deal out of it. And I've heard that, because you know, none of us have seen it, but from what I read, I believe that it's cemented somewhat in A to Z, but that, you know...
You haven't seen it. That actually surprises me. You are a man who acquires things through
the
unscrupulous methods.
The Japanese audiences are too polite to do cam rips. I don't know.
Which is like, could we? Could, no, I can't. Really? But there's no one? No.
Damn their pleasantries.
And it's a shame because A to Z, from what I've seen, has scenes I'd love to reference. Like, you know, aside from the fact that apparently it solidifies how his relationship with Akiko goes near the end of the series, there's also that incredible scene we've all seen from the trailers where he's on a rooftop with Shotaro and they just both go like, don't die, and then do like the ultimate bro fist. And just when you see that scene, like when you see that scene of them on the rooftop, don't die, bro fist, I defy anyone who tells me Axel is too antagonistic and mean. I'm like, the dude is a bro, you know? By the end of the, like, he doesn't like, they don't get along at first, but then they do, and then they really do, and they become a pair of heroes. And that's the key. They don't become friends, they don't become a sidekick, they become two Kamen Riders protecting the city. And that's the part I really liked about him.
And then the two fist each other, which is cool.
Yeah! Oh, man. men communicate through their fists. That's how it goes, you know?
Yeah, I would say he was a friend at the end. I would say that.
He was. But not in a sappy kind of like, I'm suddenly, you know, I'm here every day and I'm going to take you guys out to coffee kind of thing. I thought of him more as like an ally than a friend, really.
Well, he made the coffee. And apparently he made very nice. No, go on.
I'm pretty much agreeing with you, Mikey. They pretty much goes round to the office and sort of gives them munchies and coffee in the final episodes.
I think the way it plays with him is that, yes, he is a friend and, you know, he is a close friend, but as you say, it's not, oh, I love you and you're my bestest friend in the world and I'll die by leaping in front of the bullet and blah, 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 blah. It's, you know what, I'm your friend, you need my help, I'm there.
Yeah, it's a casual, like kind of casual friend.
It doesn't need to be said. It doesn't need to be, you know, you don't need like, I am your best friend because we have had this revelation. Or, no, I'm just, we're friends.
He's not all going like, really? You know, with all the music stopping him going like, Ore wa tomodachi desu, or something like that. Like, for all the Japanese speakers out there, I hope I just offended you with my mangulation of your language. But
can you put subtitles on a podcast? No.
I think the closest mirror to a secondary rider and the main rider in the build-up of a relationship is pretty much, I think, Yuto and Rotaro in Deno, because that one builds through. And, okay, yeah, it's overblown and cheesy and all that other stuff. But right near the end, in those closing episodes, those two do have a mutual respect for each other.
Oh, definitely,
I would say Theranos is a bit more sidekick. He has his own story, and it's one of my favorite things about Deno, to be honest, because I do love, you know, I have to fight. By the way, I'm basically erasing everything anyone ever knows about me. But I do think it was basically, you were talking about the rider tropes, the rider antagonistic or sidekick. He kind of became a sidekick to me.
Definitely more so than Axel, but in terms of the character thing of going from antagonistic to friend, but not like overblown friend, I can also kind of see that. Like it was a little overblown, but that is the nature of Deno, to be a little bit, you know, pump all the positive parts up slightly to a little bit of a cheesy nature. And I mean, I say a little bit, I'm sure someone out there is pounding their face against the table going like, how can you possibly say Deno was subtle? But
I've listened to your podcast. I do believe there is at least one person in the world who is screaming why right now.
And I will make him listen to this. I will go out of my way to spam him with this so he listens to it.
In that case, if he's listening, I love Deno. And it is not in any way anything but a Kamen Rider series, just because it has a sense of humor about itself. And I think its serious moments, of which there are plenty, are played out in a well-written and very mature fashion.
You know, people call me a troublemaker. What are they talking about? I'm not a troublemaker. Jeez.
Your dislike of Deno, person who I've never met and who may be sitting there not realizing what's going on, is based more on some sort of hormone. I'm done.
It has a flying time-traveling train. What's the...
Well, yeah. I could make this get really ugly and say, who do you think would win, the TARDIS or the Denliner? But I'm not
going to. Back TARDIS, we can go back further.
Apparently, I have a reputation, so.
Oh, an idiot, sir. Oh, no.
Oh, we're going down a bad road. We're going.
Oh,
let's return to double.
You invite two guys into the show who, for the past 6 months, have argued what is better, Kamen Rider or TARDIS. What the hell did you think was going to happen?
I'm just a troublemaker with that stuff, because I honestly think Doctor Who looks pretty cool. I just never have had the time to watch it, but so many people were so defensive of it, I couldn't resist just, like, throwing something at them from a distance.
Quick, time travel. Dano, they'll never refer to that. And they really, really happy. Anyway,
we shall return to arguing on Twitter about this.
Twitter is a time-wasting device invented to people who can't use full sentences due to disabled texting.
Lol.
I don't like Twitter.
You're just jealous of people with Twitter.
Feck off, singularly or collectively. Anyway, I want to get these guys out of the way, because I'm sure they're characters that people would complain about a lot, but I don't want to spend a lot of time with them. The Suto Irregular, Watchmen, Santa, Chen, and Queen and Elizabeth. All I'm going to say is I enjoy Santa Chen, because he is bizarre in so many ways.
He wins at the end as well. He goes from a bum not having a job to owning his own pet store.
Yes. And he's over the top and all that stuff, but he's fun. The rest of them, I really don't give a crap about. And Watchmen is slightly creepy.
I find it slightly dubious that a man that had no job and no money had a sack full of toys.
Not good.
Where the hell did he get them from?
Stole them. So the champ, the kleptomania.
He generated them from his pores.
TARDIS?
Yes! TARDIS!
That's what his bag was.
Bigger on the inside.
He's the Doctor's 15th regeneration. We don't talk about it very much.
Is that the Japanese version? Like, after America didn't do too well with it, the Japanese tried.
I have a bit of information about the informant, the guy with the long face and the big fuzzy hair.
Oh, Watchmen!
You know how he got into show business?
Show business. Hmm?
Do you know how he got into show business?
I do, but I'll let you tell the story.
Pornography?
He was involved in a reality TV show where basically they put him in a room, or it was like the Truman Show, only much, much more uglier. He was stripped naked and had to reclaim everything by doing tasks. And that went on for how many years, Chris?
Okay, so they put him in this room and did this thing, and there's a camera in front of him, and he had to accomplish so much stuff to reach some amount of, like, possessions and, I think, donation money from viewers or something like that. And then they said they'd release him. And then when they released him, the show was so successful, they released him. There's a big heartfelt episode. And they said, all right, we're going to put you up in this hotel for the night, and then we'll send you home. And then they put him into another room, stripped naked, and then left him there for another year. And
my God!
That's literally how he got into show business.
Yeah.
That seems illegal. And scary.
It made a lot of different news companies and news programs, and that is how he got. Yeah, that's how he was basically a vaguely, moderately, adequately successful comedian, and then he did this thing where they just kept locking him into rooms and subjecting him to abject cruelty, and you watched him break down every week on camera, and that got him famous. So when I saw him in Double, I actually triple taked when I saw him. Because I was like, him? In my Kamen Riders?
do you think, like they said, can we do like an in-joke where you're locked in a room? No!
Not again.
It's basically the equivalent of basically inviting Les Dennis to be in like in this big hardcore sci-fi show. You know, a man that was in a building and made the cry.
Who is Les Dennis for those who do not know, such as myself?
Les Dennis used to do this show called Family Fortunes. Chris, you may know it as Family Feuds, but yes, it's a British version. Basically, he was put in the Big Brother house about 4 or 5 years ago, just as while he was in the process of being divorced by his wife.
Yes, sir.
So he was in the Big Brother house, and he had a mental breakdown in there.
Yay!
Good times.
I really like how Andy went, like, for people who don't know who he is, such as myself. So it's like he started off subtle and on the side, then just dropped the direct bomb right afterwards.
I'm a subtle nuclear wharf head.
Nuclear wharf head.
No, warhead, not wharf head. That would be
Oh, God.
Anyway, Kamen Rider Double. Any opinion on Santa-chan and co, Andy?
I said, I thought Santa-chan was awesome, mainly because he was clearly a homeless person who had gone insane believing himself to be Santa Claus. And like I said, ended up with a pet store at the end, so he is the unsung hero, or at least lucky guy at the end of that show. I didn't care too much for crazy watcher person, because he seemed to just randomly stalk and take pictures of people. And
are you surprised now?
Not really. It seems like
he doesn't remember what they look like.
And the two girls, whatever. They were, Shoro's little high school gossip girls, which is kind of weird that you want to know what is going on in the schools.
I think the storyline behind that was Shotaro is basically an ex-schoolboy himself. I think he was, like, on the year above them. Because if you notice, he was in his school get-up in Begins Night.
Mm-hmm.
So as we basically begin with Double, he's basically left school for a year. Whereas those two are still in their final years, I suppose it is. So they're basically old school friends.
Fair enough.
Mm. Okay, no one cares. You don't care for anyone.
No, I like Skull.
That's not a person. That's an experience.
What?
I don't know. Now, I think these two can be dealt with very, very quickly. The two most pointless characters in the show. Two policemen. I didn't care for them.
Is Chris not allowed to talk about the two girls?
Everyone forgets about Angel.
Oh, God, Chris, I'm sorry. I'm new at this.
Women.
I do this all the time to my own podcasters, and I've been doing it for just over 2 years. And yeah, they always make me feel horrible afterwards.
Now you get to do it to someone else,
yeah.
Chris.
Don't give them ideas. Just tell us what you think about the characters.
So,
yeah, make him kill Chris.
What I really liked about the Irregulars was that they were there, they were effective at what they did, and at no point did they ever try to insert some kind of serious backstory into them or make them tragic or do anything with them that was unnecessary. I actually really liked that they were, they were kind of shallow, but they were a constant. They were kind of like a good anchor for the show. They were pretty silly. Queen and Elizabeth, they were very nice to look at, and I can't say any more than that or I'll get arrested. But I do have an interesting bit of info about them, because I was curious why they kept talking about their new CD that they released, in an extremely subtle advertising campaign through the show, where they kept waving it right in front of the camera. They're actually part of a really large singing group, which is an all-female teen singing group of like 40-some members or something like that, and each member has a number, and they are two of the numbered members. So that is their singing roots. I did some Wikipedia diving, because that's what I do, not just because they were extremely attractive young Japanese women.
Dig in the hole. Digging yourself into a hole.
Would you like to just have a seat over there?
Drop the shovel.
That hole.
Watcherman, I was into Watcherman, but that's only because I am kind of endeared by the actor himself. He was also in Densha Otoko, and I recall seeing him there. That's a show that some people here may know, some people probably have no idea what I'm talking about. But no, the Irregulars, they served a purpose, and I'm glad that they served a purpose and didn't do too much unnecessary stuff. Although they were often a vehicle for some of the more lighthearted bits, and, of course, through that, some of the bits that would make some people roll their eyes and groan and start talking about Denno and et cetera, et cetera.
Wonderful, wonderful Denno.
Yes, wonderful Denno.
Well, would you say, Chris, that you are happy that they were not forgotten about in the story, unlike in this podcast where you were quite obviously forgotten about?
Yes. I'm glad that they were not Vangelist.
Yeah.
I'll
just point out, I know where both of you live.
I liked that they were introduced as the stakes when Kazu, went on his little utopia rampage and went after everyone close to Shotaro and Philip. And I like that, because that is how, as serious as I wanted to see them get treated, is that they are friends of those guys and they are vulnerable. And I like that, I actually liked that a villain finally went after them. And it really made sense. And it made me go like, oh no, you know, like I was worried for them because, they were the innocent characters, and having this guy walk around sucking their life force out and taking their faces off was kind of harsh, and I like that. So I'm kind of a fan of the Irregulars, even though I don't really want to see more of them than I did.
Anyway, now that I remembered him, shut up, Andy.
Yay.
I didn't like the policemen. They were just comic relief characters that had no point. And I will be bringing that up if we ever get onto it. What am I talking about? I don't know. Anyone else have an opinion of them?
I have an opinion for them. I agree with you about them to a point. They did serve a purpose. They basically proved, hello, where were the police and all this crap? Mostly unconscious. I did like Jin. I did like the guy with the back rubber around his neck. I thought he was all right. I didn't like his scrawny little friend. I hated him. I didn't like him. But I just like the fact that he just had this total slacker for a copper. He is basically Constable Dibble. I liked him. I didn't like his scorny little friend. But their main point was, it was just to prove to you, hello, police are around. It ain't just like police completely by shoulder row.
I kind of agree with you that they. I like the purpose they serve, but also I have a bit of background info on them. At least the older fellow with the back rubber, Jin, he's a stand-up comic, and that kind of shows through his performance in the show. But I did like that they gave him an episode that wasn't really a serious episode, but it was one to show you that he actually has, like, virtues that make him worthwhile as a policeman, even though, like, you can... I really like that montage where they show you him getting tricked by the UFO comment 50 times in a row. It's like, no matter what's happening, he's like, UFO! The guy, like, looks up, he's like, what?
I did, afterward, the... Right, I'm going to go looking for aliens. You're coming to help. Oh, God. And you just feel bad. Oh, my God.
I like how he tricks them with a Yeti, and yet there was actually a Yeti there.
The Yeti dope hunt. The Yeti dope hunt.
Was it a dope hunt?
No, but I'm going to pretend it was.
It was a Yeti. Later on, there'll be another Kamen Rider series where they're basically being inundated with Yetis.
Kamen Rider
That's
Yeti.
Probably coming up. Common rider, yeah. Oh, I'm the secondary rider is Sasquatch. Anyway, someone say something else. Andy, police. I know you're not a fan of the police in general.
They are my enemies.
They always arrest me for things I didn't do.
Well, at least they can't prove straight away.
Body's probably a good hint.
Yeah. No, I just hide the bodies in my wall. I take notes from Ryuki.
That's not a... Hang on.
You're going to get et by your monster, just FYI.
Oh, I hope not. That's why I'll pull my monster's teeth out before my
death. No. You see, the secret about him is he is the contract monster.
It's true. I'm one of the only mirror creatures that has made it out of the mirror world without dissolving.
I want to contract Andy. So I'll have armor that's fashioned after Andy's body.
The thing is, Chris, you'll go for the sword vent and you just rip off my arm. Just blood pours from me.
That's cudgel vent.
Give
it back! No. But no, on the police side of things, they're all right. I liked the back scratcher. I appreciate how he seemed to get a new back scratcher every so often. Almost like a seasonal thing. Like when it was winter, he'd have a certain... Like, I think by the end of it, he had an orange one. I think he had a blue one at one point and maybe a black one. I don't know. He was all right. And I liked how the, I can't remember the other one, was just always like, I don't like you, Shotaro. And he's like, shut up. Okay. Give me a back massage. Okay. Yeah, I'm old.
Yeah, he was Shotaro's bitch at the end, wasn't he?
Well, yeah. he was there to be pushed around.
Oh, totally.
Yeah. problem with characters like that is that that's all they're there for.
He was kind of cute in the Triceratops story when he was lusting after the Los Angeles based Japanese police woman.
Are you suggesting he was horny?
I am indeed. I loved how him and Jin did their physical training of kind of standing there half heartedly slapping at each other while they're watching other people.
Yeah, he was horn. Perhaps he was been trying to think. Oh! He was shrimp.
I'm sorry. I'm extremely fast.
Oh no!
Common complaints or no? Anyway, let's get on to someone I think is actually quite difficult to discuss. Shroud, because Shroud is more a concept than a character. She's an interesting driving force behind it all. I'll just say right now, I had her and Philip figured out by episode 4, and Shroud deep by episode 4. But it was sort of, you knew exactly what was coming up for her, so there wasn't a huge surprise in her big revelation. It was kind of interesting to see she'd been working behind the scenes with Eve and Isaka, but it was just, I enjoyed her as a driving force and an explanation of where all this stuff was coming from. Where did the weather memory come from? From her. Where did the technology come from? From her. And she was important for Axel's story. Teruyi had to, if I'm pronouncing that right, had to have someone to work against in his storyline. But apart from that, she didn't hold my interest, and I have a sneaking suspicion there wasn't actually anything wrong with her face. She was just very self-conscious about his zit.
That's one way of saying it. She could have been horribly burnt and have, you know, her face, like, flopping off.
I thought she was horribly burnt.
I thought so as well.
Yeah. I refuse. I don't know.
Blue goo is very flammable, you know.
She was the same person who played Taboo. That's all I know.
Oh, I was going to bring that up. I thought I was going to be all insightful and be the guy who says it. But, yeah, the woman in the Shroud suit was also the woman who put on the Taboo suit.
However, not the woman who did the voice acting.
Yeah.
No.
There was a woman in the bushes pretending to be Shroud at that time.
Oh,
God. She was a bush.
I'll chip in here, because I think me and Andy, we've had discussions about who Shroud was for a long time, and my theory, I always knew she was going to be one of the family, but I thought she was already one that we already saw. I had theory that she she's only one to sit out. How she would pull that off, I don't know. I thought there might be some kind of time travel involved. But there was some part of her was definitely akin to one of the two sisters. And when we had Psycho's storyline where she basically broke away from the family, I thought that would lead her to her becoming Shroud. But I never thought she'd be someone other than somebody in the family. So I was glad that my theory was proven true in the end.
I said it was his mum.
Okay. You're right. Yeah, you were right. Well, yeah, too. But we both agreed it was one of the family. But I will point it out, Shroud technically appears in every single episode of the show. She's in the opening credits.
Yes.
She's the one who approaches Shotaro at the beginning of the credits and flicks through the pictures of him approaching her.
Despite the fact she hates him.
She hates him.
She comes to like him in the end.
No, she doesn't.
Well, she appreciates it's Walter.
She stops trying to kill him.
Yeah, that's what I class as liking
so much. She also says, you know, I want you to make sure that Philip is smiling. And I thought that was kind of like she's accepting him as Philip's friend. And
I think she's just given up. Because she, to be fair, she was basically saying, I'll either kill you or make it so you can never do anything again by being 50 years old and essentially killing you 50 years early.
Well, what a dumb
thing. I'll just say right now, old Shotaro is the greatest human being who's ever lived.
Give me a bash,
count up your sins, Sonny. And he beat the crap out of it.
Yeah, that was mean.
Don't screw with old men, because they'll hurt you. Andy. Because we will all be old men one day, unless I have my say. Andy, anything you'd like to say about Shroud?
As the embodiment of revenge, he did a good job of showing all what revenge can lead to, bitterness and
in slight ways, deformity of a person, which I thought was kind of neat. Though I always thought it was amusing when it did a close-up shot of a face and it showed it, you could see the little mouth flap moving slightly. I was like, oh, that just looks very redonkulous. and I liked how she'd only bandaged up her face part and let her hair just flow over. And I gotta give the actress credit who was in that suit. She must have been sweating like a fat person somewhere, anywhere.
Sweating because, like, you know, a fat person somewhere.
Anywhere. Don't forget anywhere. Yeah.
Because there were a lot of shots of her in, like, you know, warm days, or what I would assume in Japan would be a warm day. And I would assume they'd also have a lot of lighting and stuff pointing at her, so that's extra heatage. So for her, you know, that would have sucked. But, I mean, the people in the Kamen Rider suits probably stink of the place as well.
At the end of the show, it wasn't so much of her passing on, it was her avoiding spontaneous combustion.
People just housing her in water just to keep her alive. And I like the fact that somehow she kept getting memories and stuff. It's like, oh, I have Trial, here you go. Oh, I have Axel and the sword, here you go. It's like,
how did she get that sword to him?
She just made it. You know, I make swords all the time out of weird things like pie.
How'd she list it, though? Made a ton. Where? Why was she always in that field?
She was underneath. She was, like, really ripped. So, you know, she just picked up the sword a lot. So, like, she was like, I'm totally manly underneath my clothing, you know.
I'm sure that's very insulting to the actress, who I'm sure is very
interesting. No, I'm sorry, the character is very manly, because we never saw. You were putting words in my mouth and trying to make me sound like a horrible human being. That's my job.
Yes, welcome. I like being on the other side of it. Why was she always in that field? I want everyone to contribute to this. What was with that field that she never left it?
I think it was probably something symbolic, perhaps something to do with her past. I bet you she took the Sonozaki girls there to pick flowers or something, and it had some kind of significance to her.
I prefer to imagine that there was a hill, and she would run up the hill singing "The Hills Are Alive" with the sound of me screaming "Vengeance."
I will say, I may be overthinking this, but every time they went to that field, especially in the latter episodes, they did computer image up the field with a particular kind of hue of green.
Mm.
And considering what we know about the family now, it may be some relevance to that.
Mm.
Like I said, I could well be completely overthinking it, but...
Well, she is one of the leftover story threads, and if the Movie War 2011 does do another flashback to the Narumi Sokichu days, who's to say that they don't also show you what she was up to back then? So,
because
that's the thing about the show is I trust the writers more than I usually trust Kamen Rider writers, and I have a feeling I'm not going to say it's absolute, but there's a decent chance that Shroud and Narumi Sokichi could get expanded on in the Movie War 2011 if they decide to go that route.
And even if they aren't, it's a case where you don't mind that these things aren't. It's not like some shows where you didn't explain this. You realize how massively stupid that was. This is, well, you didn't explain it, but... I decided to leave the button up there.
Ellipses.
Remarkably, after nearly 2.5 hours, we might as well get on to, I don't know, the title or character.
Who?
Steve.
We've already talked about the cat.
His name is Steve.
Who the hell is Steve?
Steve Double.
Steve Double. God, that actually does sound like a detective. Steve Double. Let's talk about Kamen Rider Double and the Boyos. The Boyos. Shotaro Hidari, or Hidari Shotaro, and Philip. And I'm only calling him Philip because I hate the name Raito. Raito Lefto, we get the joke.
Are you Raito Lefto?
Anyone got anything to say about him? Because I'm not sure how to approach these. Because I can't really look at these two as individuals. I've linked them together in my brain.
Yeah, can I make a start about Philip? Because I remember I did a couple of videos reviewing the first few episodes of Double. And I came across this theory about Philip. Obviously now gone completely left field and I'm completely wrong. But when I first met Philip, I thought there was a little bit of... When I first met Philip. When we first meet Philip in the show... Chat up, boys. I had this theory that he had a little bit of autism about him.
Oh, I hated that theory. I'm sorry to say.
I hated that theory.
Well, you suck too, Andy.
That was my least favorite part of your video reviews.
Oh, jeez, man.
I apologize to any autistic people listening. Andy's an insensitive bastard. He doesn't care about you or your feelings.
I'm sorry, that's a funny way to react.
Someone sensitive actually watches this.
I had this theory about the character. I hated that theory.
Oh. I was very comfortable hearing it.
Will you guys let me finish this? Bloody hell, people, shh. Right. No, I did have this theory. Obviously, it's wrong. Okay, Andy, shut up. But it was through his performances. It's like he had this key thing. But now, obviously, because with him, it is literally data retrieval because he is a being made of living data. So, of course, he would be acting the way he is because it's like data input to him and he's got to see it through to the end. But at the time, with me, that's the way I approach it. Now, the thing is, and not an awful lot of people know this, is that my own brother is autistic. So I can see a lot of my brother in him as the character. So that's why I come to that conclusion. Obviously, completely changed his left wheel. We now know what we know about Philip. But I found him to be a very interesting character at the beginning, and I definitely find him to be a very interesting character at the end. A brilliant, brilliant piece of character development all the way through. To which we didn't really know all that much. Soon we had our theories again. We knew pretty much from the first few episodes he was obviously a member of the family, but we didn't know the ins and outs behind what happened to him. But then we know it's like, of course. But I will say, although he's the relative newcomer in the cast, because, well, we did obviously did the wiki things before we did this, he's obviously one of those J-Bot model boys that we all like to criticize.
He's
about.
Young, too.
He's very young. I didn't know this, but the dude's 17 years old.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
He does not look it.
I did a bloody great four caps tweet about it like a day or two ago. I said, fucking hell, the dude's 17. I think for this being his first main role, I think he did a fucking good job.
Absolutely.
A very, very good job.
Absolutely. I actually agree with you too about the not autism in specific in utter specific I forgot the word I'm looking for. Specificity. There we go. I'm English. I agree that he had a really interesting eccentricity about the way he acted, especially at the beginning. I always thought it disappeared faster than I would have liked, because it was something that was actually it's something that kept me through the series when it hit low points. Like for me, and it turns out for a lot of people, when we hit the lowest point of the series, which was the Heaven's Tornado two-parter, angry young street dancer men outside high school saying, "You can't ignore this." Like whiny little pansies. I have feelings about the Heaven's Tornado episodes. Those episodes were, that pair of episodes to me was carried by the wonderful eccentricity of Philip just being obsessed with seeing this dance move. And then when he saw it, he was like, all right, whatever. I'm more interested in this stuff now that I've seen that. I love that he just dropped it after he saw it. 'Cause it's like, all right, he's done. He's seen it. New thing has interested him. And yes, he was aside from, you know, his character development was pretty cool. And the actor, though, it was doing especially as a 17-year-old Japanese actor in a Japanese drama, did an amazing job because, given his age and given the nature of his character, you know, that is, any other director probably would have sidled him with so many irritating little habits and mannerisms. And I really loved, like, for instance, the fact that he spoke in a fairly low-toned voice. And, as an actor, he really got into it. Like, if you've seen the behind the scenes footage for A to Z, there's a scene in there where Philip has to start, you know, shedding tears as he has a row with Shotaro, and Philip's actor got so into it that he actually could not stop crying for about 10 minutes after the scene was done, because the dude really put himself into his work and tried his hardest. And no matter what happens to him later on down the road, this is definitely something to be proud of. The work he did on the show.
other guy.
Which other guy?
You other guy. You. How many other guys?
I don't know. There are many inside my head, so I don't know. I like the fact that in the movie as well, he kind of went back and became the very obsessive character he was at the start of the series, which was kind of a nice little go, oh yeah, I forgot he was completely obsessed about things. But he was a lot more douchey at that point, obviously, because he was just in museum and people were like, hey, you should do some memory stuff. Look at these memories. Woo!
Yeah.
So that was nice. I got over the fact that he lost that quickly, just because I assumed that after the movie, there was probably a little gap of time, so he was slowly developing even at that point, and by the time we came into the series, he was near the end of like getting out of that phase. At least that's how I convinced myself anyway, that that's how it worked. But no, really nice character, developed at an okay pace throughout the series. Interesting Fang thing that he had. And I like the fact he was a living internet Google search engine. I thought that was fun.
Except he'd probably get you your information a lot quicker.
Yeah, pretty much.
And less porn.
I don't know. I'm sure if he searched up those words, I'm sure he'd come across a lot, because there were a lot of books in there, let's be fair.
Earth's Ivory.
Yeah, exactly. Mm. They probably have Transformers Almanac 2 in there as well.
Bastard!
I already have two copies of that. I don't need any other.
Oh, I hate shoes.
You're a double bastard.
Fire, burn. Burn him with fire.
Page 135, baby.
Yes, you're an official animated character. Out your arse.
Interesting choice of clothing as well. From pajamas to super, super J-pop.
Well, did you know they made a clothing line based on the show, and all of the Philip clothes are aimed directly at women?
Really?
Yes.
Yeah.
Wow. That doesn't surprise me as much as I thought it might.
Do you know what's weird about that, though? I think they worked for him because he had that sort of airy-fairy air... Not airy.
this is more fairy than what I said.
He was homosexual, and I don't like homosexuals because they're bad people.
You go. End of podcast. I've been banned from internet.
Why are you hosting?
I don't know. It was my idea, and someone said, oh, I don't want to do it. It would be funny if I didn't get on. I don't care if you're gay or not. You're inferior to me one way or the other. Anyway, he had this away with the birds feeling, shall we say. And I think having clothes that were clearly not picked out with a sense of style, yet somehow accomplished a sense of style, was a good visual medium of sort of you making you tilt your head and going, huh, he's a little different.
Definitely.
I can't really add anything apart from my deepest apologies to the homosexual Kamen Rider fan community. I blame Andy.
On his very first show that he hosts, it's already gone there.
Well, if I get it out of the way now, and I'm ever put in charge of something again, I can't really go anywhere but nowhere to go from here, lad.
I'll get you to... oh, God, bloody car. Mikey, I will get you to host another show, just so we can prolong the torture.
Hey, I can't really add into... I'm just staying on top if it kills me. I can't really add anything to what anyone said about Philip. He was a well-developed character. He had a good arc. He had some nice little quirks that weren't intrusive. And I can't really say anything else about him. I really, really enjoyed him. And I have to admit, my all-time favorite Phillip scene is where he rematerializes from Extreme, and he just turns around in a slightly cocky, cheeky, "How are you there?" And it's just like, yes! I love it. I just... Phillip, if there were more characters, if there were characters that well written in Western fiction, I probably would be watching it more of it right now.
So true. So true.
And now someone talk about the man in the funny hat.
Man, no man has ever made me feel better about not being perfect than Shotaro has. And that's what I love about Shotaro is that I'm at this thing running with a friend of mine when the show started, because my friend was like, "Oh man, he's not hard boiled at all. Look at this guy. He's like a J-boy in a hat trying too hard." And I was like, that's the character. He's a guy who will never be hard boiled for he'll never become a hard boiled man, and he tries to be a hard boiled man wearing all these clothes to an almost ludicrous degree, but that is what is wonderful about him. It's said many times that and it's implied that the whole point of Shotaro is he proves you don't have to be hard-boiled, that you can be a half-boiled man who wears his heart on his sleeve, and that might actually accomplish more, at the expense of your own emotions to a degree. And that's what I loved about him, is that he was the guy who's always trying really hard. He never becomes what he wants to be, but what he actually is might actually be a greater thing. Also, the actor, I have to say, best Kamen Rider actor, in my opinion, of the recent years, aside from maybe Odagiri Joe. Because what I love about Shotaro is that the guy did not do a lot of things I thought he was going to do. Never once does Shotaro, throw his head back, tears running down his face, and go, "Ah!" Do a big J-boy cry. The one of the greatest things about Shotaro is that up until the penultimate episodes, he actually never shed a tear that I can recall, aside from the flashback. When in Begins Night, when he gets told by Alternate Skull that, the hat suits him, the part that made the whole movie worth it for me, I said before, is when he starts to cry and he holds it back and he just kind of goes like, "Ah!" and he turns around, and I was like, that's perfect. And then, the nobody's perfect bit right before they become Extreme. Again, he stops and just kind of like sucks back one sob, and he's like, "Thank you." And I was like, it's perfect. And then in 48, the scene that made everyone watching it start shedding tears was beautiful, because that's when the character finally broke, and it made it more worthwhile and a lot more impactful, because up until then he'd been a pretty tough dude, all things considered. Like, he really was good at holding back his emotions to a degree, or at least the more sobby emotions. I love his performance in the show. He's the highlight of the show for me, in terms of things that are in every episode. Just his performance, his ability to be understated, all things considered, in context. Love Shotaro, and I love the actor. And also, that actor is a huge Kamen Rider Black fan, which might
be one of us, what you're saying.
Well, he grew up on Kamen Rider Black, and it's been said many times he's probably why Kamen Rider Joker has so many similarities to Black. Because the guy loves Black.
And like Rider Punch, and
Rider Punch.
Yeah, it wasn't like the usual yelling out in the hack about Rider Punch. Very soft,
I know.
Quiet.
It's like he's muttering it to himself to pump himself up. I loved. Oh man, no.
Yeah.
Shotaro, I gotta put a cork in myself, because I can go on and on about Shotaro. So.
you were saying like he's muttering it to himself. I always looked at like the reason they shout names is to get them in sync.
Yeah.
It's like it's not the usual. Why are we shouting a name? We're in anime. We're in whatever. It's what we do. It's right. We need both have the mind to be in sync, or this is going to shoot out off and kill someone's granny. So we need a message
to send, Mikey.
Get your mind in sync, or old people die, because I'll kill them.
Is this a statement about the show, or is this just you talking, Mikey?
I don't think I can really top the "I hate all gay people."
It's official now. You said it again.
You said it again.
I know gay people, and they're smarter than me.
Is that why you dislike them?
That's gotta be one of the best lines I've heard in a long time. I know gay people. They're all smarter than me.
Can I just get this out of the way before I wet myself, please?
I'll put a little full stop on that statement. Hairy fairy. You can't beat that guy.
Don't get Irish terminology. I'm a minority in this conversation. Everyone here is either from from England or an American colony turned French or English or whatever Canada was.
Is he trying for the sympathy vote because he's from Ireland now?
Hang on. So you're trying to cover up the fact that you're bigoted towards gay people by basically not turning into a racist.
You can get a sympathy vote for being from Ireland?
I think if anything's going to get you a sympathy vote, it's being from a country where... Listen, I was on the phone to someone last night, and they basically said, the reason my life is the way it is because the leprechauns got to me. This is how people relate to me. Leprechauns and shamrock and things. And I'm... God damn it, Shogro! Shogro! I like Shogro. I like Shogro, and I think he's very entertaining, and he's the balance between the crazy and the serious that occurs in Double. Because he sort of walks the line, shall we say. He has those ridiculous moments that, say, Philip or Axel wouldn't really have. Why do I keep calling him Axel? Terry Ewing wouldn't have. But he also has the incredibly serious moments. And the half-wild aspect, what I like is that he never really realizes that not only is that his style, it's for him, it's how he should be, because he is too trusting and too open about his feelings to be hard-boiled. Mm. I loved his character progression, partly because it's really a progression. His character doesn't change much. It's not like Philip, who comes out of a shell, or Teiyue, who goes from this aggressor to this more open individual. It's not so much that he changes as that we see why he is the way he is.
Yeah, definitely.
And I really enjoyed that. And I don't know if I'd say he's the best Kamen Rider actor we've had in a few years. Because going back to my own fandom, you know, controversy approaches, I would say, I think his name's Takaru or something. He played Ryotaro. That guy had to convincingly play six different characters. Mm-hmm. And the range of emotion that guy was capable of portraying, and portraying convincingly, and just the body language, the fact that you could never confuse Momotaro, Ryotaro with any of the other ones, not just because of the hairstyle or the eye color, just by how he's standing, how he's expressing himself, the facial expression, you could always convince yourself it's a different person. You know, I think he's definitely up there in just terms of acting quality.
Certainly,
I think
Shotaro's
actor is gold. And I think if you had more actors like that in Kamen Rider, I would have more love for main character in Kamen Rider. Because as much as I've come to enjoy the series, there aren't a lot of shows that really have a main character I'm drawn to. I'm not drawn to Kenzaki and Blade or Agiko's name escapes me at the moment. Sochi?
Shoichi.
Shoichi. I'm not really drawn to him. I'm not drawn to Takumi. I liked the original Kuga. I liked Yusuke quite a bit. If for no other reason, I thought he was probably the most down-to-earth one. But, you know, they're not fantastic. I'm more interested in the antagonistic riders or in the villains or whatever than I am in the main character outside of, oh my god, it's a cool guy fighting. In the case of Deno and in the case of Double, the main characters are carrying this series on their shoulder and are, in my opinion, doing a fantastic job.
You mean you aren't a devoted fanboy of Wataru?
No, I am not a devoted fanboy of that whiny little, oh, look at me, I'm hiding. Oh, no, I'm not hiding because it's no longer important to the plot. Oh, I hinted I wasn't human in the first episode. It's not mentioned again for 40 episodes. No one cares. Get back in your bin. Why are you in a bat talking to your bat and dragon? Why do you have a dragon in the first place? Why do you know...
What have I caused?
Why do you have werewolf powers and have never met the guy?
Okay,
who are you?
For everyone...
What's the point of this? Why?
For everyone who does like Wataru, let me just throw you guys a bone now. I feel bad that I unloaded a powerful punch into his jaw, his fragile feminine jaw.
Yeah.
He is. I really like him as a performer in his band. I think he is cool in his band, and he does a decent job. Even though he's very glam rock. I think he does a great job in that band. I actually like him more as a member of Tetrafang than as his character in Kiva.
Tetrafang is actually quite good. As I said earlier on, I was basically killing time earlier on listening to their songs from Kiva.
So. Yeah. So I want to throw it out there.
That makes sense!
Let's throw it out there.
So angry.
Mikey, calm down. Calm. You calm?
I'm so mad I'm going to go back in time and abort my own birth before it happens.
Andy, talk about Shoujo while I fume.
I really don't know how to follow after that mass of rage and hatred, but I will try. I looked at it like...
Monsters. I love monsters and Kiva room monsters and dragons and candles.
Okay.
Double. We're talking about double. Double. Okay? Double. Double.
Let me shut up and know.
Double.
Mm.
Is he done?
We all agree we're talking about double now.
Hell yeah.
Okay, double.
Oh, the boy. Yeah. Okay.
Andy!
As Mikey stopped.
Just go.
Okay, so if Philip is the brain of double, then I looked at Shoujo as the heart, because he was the emotional guy who related to all of his cases on a more personal level, obviously, than Philip could. And I kind of like that about him. Even in the Anomano Karis episodes, which I wasn't a great fan of, I liked how he related to the child and the situation that the child was in. I thought that was kind of neat. And it showed that this was a caring, cool dude. And like I said before, when I was talking about Skull, I looked at him as the apprentice trying to live up to his far, far greater master. And in the end, became that guy. Even though he needs his friends still, he can cope without Philip around. And I thought that was a good last episode. Him coming to terms with needing to function without Philip, but also realizing at the end that he prefers having his friends around, which makes sense. So I generally liked the character. He was no Wataru, thank God. And I liked how he was able, again, to mix serious and comedy quite well. Because he was quite obviously not hard-boiled, but cool in the fact that he was not hard-boiled, if you see what I'm saying.
I loved it, though, when he tried to act it, especially when an attractive young woman would come into the office with a case, and he'd be all like, "Oh, miss, well, let me tell you how we do things here." Like, that to me was astounding, and I loved it.
Oh, yeah. The thing is, I could imagine him, like, that's how he would approach a lady generally. Like, he'd get a hat and just be like, "Hello, do you know I'm part of a Kamen Rider show?" I'm hard-boiled in it.
Something you said there, Kamen Rider. I love how they explain the name in the show.
Yes!
I adore how they... Yeah, it's like, in some shows, it's a technological superior thing, and if they don't have that, they don't use the term. Here it's, they don't know it's called, so they can really... You know, using the name Kamen Rider, I am going to break their legs.
Yes! There's actually a great line from 48 I wrote down on my notepad file I keep for notes, because I loved it, when he's all like, "Even if I'm alone, I'll hunt you down and beat you up. The spirit is what it means to be a Kamen Rider, and don't ever forget the city has a Kamen Rider protecting it." I was like, dude! And then Kazu June's all like, "Kamen Rider?" And I was like,
that was hilarious. The Kamen Rider, what the hell? I don't know what's going on.
Yeah, and then it's like, dude, you're trying to mock him for saying Kamen Rider, and that's why I didn't mind that beatdown, because I was like, dude, you had it coming so hard when you were like, "Kamen Rider?" It's like, yes, Kamen Rider. Bicycle kick.
Matt, anything? Shoujo?
Nothing can really beat what the guys have said. I will add a little something to it. Shoujo's whole journey was based around that white hat. He tried it on Begins Night. He wasn't ready for it. The whole time it's been hanging up there, broken rimmed, up on the hat rack. And the moment he put that on in episode 48, I gave a little woot because he was so ready for it.
I made a moment, much less manly noise.
Yeah, well, you know what I mean. All right, how's that going, man? Yeah, you were like, ah, ooh, I want some Japanese candy now.
that sounded so wrong.
The moment he put that hat on his head, that was the full stop in his storyline. That is where his destination lied. He put that on, he was ready for that hat, and for the little time he wore it, he was that guy. He was the man's man. That torch was passed officially. That's all I'm going to say.
I actually have a small little side topic, if you don't mind, that stems from that. I've been curious about your guys' thoughts on it. I read some very interesting debates as to when he fights Utopia, you know, untransformed, and he blocks the Utopia death touch with the hat. There have been two main explanations I've seen for that. Number one, people said Utopia requires body contact to suck your life out, so it was just a very smart tactical move, and that's, you know, I agreed with that, but there's another one that I liked even more, which is that what that hat represents and the sheer amount of hope and justice that's been infused in that hat is indestructible in the face of the Utopia dopant, and I thought that was also kind of a cool explanation, but I was curious how you guys took the hat block.
I originally took it as he needs physical contact, but when you think about it, he didn't use physical contact to drain trial.
Mm-hmm.
He just touched, all your power is gone. But I do like the idea that, well, we did see, like, you can't handle the amount of emotion Philip has in him right now.
Mm-hmm.
And it will kill you if you try and absorb it, and you just don't have it what it takes. You're not the guy to hold that much power. And I do like the idea that, you know what, strong emotions, he isn't capable of them. It's not just, he said he's not expressive. The simple fact of the matter is he is a bit dead inside and outside. Mm-hmm. But he isn't capable of these powerful human emotions, so it would make sense that someone in Shoto's case, fueled with both, you know, the need to help Philip fulfill his final case, and that hat represents everything that's good and right in Shotaro's life. And then Philip, like, the last emotions he has as he's doing it to save his sister, these kind of real powerful emotions, he simply can't handle them in a natural barrier, because a utopia is a place of one person's dream, and everyone would have their own utopia. It was the same concept, battling out, and one had to come out on top, kind of thing. I may have wandered off there.
That's all right, because that is Narumi Sokichi's hat. That's the topic you can get that deep into, in my opinion.
I love that hat. So.
I bought the figure art for that hat.
Good man. Did the hat expand?
No, it's already pre-expanded to fit his head. This is a little topic I wanted to raise up, just because it was one of the bigger discussion points on the final episode that had, like, some levels to it that wasn't just the whole, like, that fight was too short, or that fight was awesome. Like, there was some cool, intelligent stuff going on there in terms of symbolism.
I think the symbolism there was, he is now a man.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, pretty much.
You just should have had in the back, I'm a man, a manly, manly man.
That would have, yeah.
I think that's pretty much it for the characters. I had a big plan for talking about plot and stuff, but we've been at this for 3 hours and pretty much covered it up. There is one thing I do want to talk about. Well, actually, there's two things as we bring it to a close. One is an episode and one isn't. I'll get the non-episode one out of the way. I think the music in Double is the best consistently we've had in probably the 10 years Kamen Rider has been back in the air, especially in considering the fact that since Deno you've had multiple songs for different characters and different ending themes and whatnot. So Kiva had some really nice stuff, but there was some stuff in there I didn't really like. Decade, I liked the start of Ride the Wind and I liked Journey. But in Double Music, and if there's one thing I wish it's a Dope Amp theme, I'd love that music. And just like Labor Day, who did Cyclone Effect and Extreme Dream, loved it. Not Nelson Sandham.
I actually liked a lot of the background music in the latter half of the show a little bit more than the first half, although the first half, it was definitely good and really fit the mood. I'm a real big sucker for unabashed epicosity, so that's why I've always kind of liked the Decade stuff, or actually the Blade soundtrack gets really epic at times. But in terms of songs, WBX is an awesome opener, and to the show's credit, like, you know, the show, it never had a regular place for the theme to start. It was always waiting for just that perfect moment of, like, line, pause, the scarf blowing in the wind. And it's like, oh, like, that music represents a lot of cool storytelling to me. And with the ending themes, I usually, for a while, I was only really into the more metal-ish heat metal one. But due to episode 48, I have trouble listening to the acoustic version of Cyclone Effect now.
I did not see that coming. I did not. You're like, hang on. Oh no, you've made it sad.
And I tried listening to it later that day. I put it on my radio show even, and then I was like, And then a guy called Kenka Bansho, who was in the global chat room, said, "Why you can't play this music now?" Because he'd just seen 48 as well.
Oh god. I just love the fact that, like, there's some people like, oh, that reminds me of the day my wife died.
God.
No. It's like, you do have people like say they can't hear a song anymore because they heard it on the day their wife died or their child died or whatever. There are people for the next few months who are like, oh, I can't hear that song. Why? Because Philip died.
That's when Philip disappeared and Shotaro finally shed tears.
Yeah, and then he broke down completely at the end of the episode, which was good.
That sequence was cruel, but beautifully cruel. Mm-hmm. Like, just I didn't think they were going to take it that far, and then, like, when they had the whole thing of editing in, like, Shotaro's hand over the extreme body grabbing the belt, and I was like, dude, that's like that. Like, it went beyond bromantic, and it was so straight faced as it did it. I loved it.
Still very manly.
Yeah.
But there's nothing wrong with crying in that situation. Andy, Matt, music.
I love Double BX. It is on my iTunes the most listened to song I have at present date, shortly followed by the Shinkenshu song. I haven't actually listened to much of the ending themes on the basis that usually when I'd watch the show, I was like, I will watch the trailer for the next part of the show, and then I will try and find the next show. I would prefer to get the other stuff if I could, but the actual...
I've mentioned Extreme Dream.
What's that? Yeah, you have. I can't remember if I still have that or not. I think I do. I haven't got around to listening to it yet, though. But I do like the in-show music as well, like the Sonozaki music was always cool. Doo-doo. I was like, yes.
I'm not sure if cool is the word. The sort of, like, chills.
I say evil is cool, so yeah. It was just like, yes, these guys are evil, and I think it is awesome. I don't know why, but I can't pick out any other. I think the comedy tune, which I can't remember it right off the top of my head, was always a fun one as well.
Mm-hmm.
Like Decade had an interesting one, but it didn't have much of a catch to it. But in I don't know, I think Double had a bit more of a catchy comedy tune.
It fit the rest of the music really well, because a lot of times when a Kamen Rider soundtrack comes out, the comedy tune is usually one of the most, like, almost, like, I don't mean this in the negative way, it's just that it's so starkly different from the rest of the music, it's almost vulgar, especially on Ryuki. Like, Ryuki's comedy music was almost, like, acid trip bizarre.
Yeah, it was mental. I can't actually remember that, and that's probably by choice.
It sounds like xylophones being played through three dimensions.
Yeah.
Is the best way I can describe it.
Yeah. Not my favorite, but no, Doubles was able to, I don't know, all the music you could imagine connect in that world, and it really helps the feeling of Doubles' little Futo town, I would say.
Mm-hmm.
I liked it. It's cool.
I suppose it's my turn now.
Yes.
I'm completely with Andy on the whole iTunes thing. I've got it on my iPod. I've got three different versions. In fact, I've got the proper TV version, which why I've got that there, I don't know, because it's so short. Which is the one I listen to the most. And I've got an orchestral one, well, the instrumental one without the songs. And I'll tell you what, listening to it without the lyrics is actually an experience in itself as well. It's actually pretty cool.
Mm-hmm.
Some instrumental versions can get a little bit sucky, where sometimes they add an instrument to replace the lyrics.
Yeah.
But this one, you just get completely lost in the instruments. Try it one day. Just listen out for the instrumental version. It is actually quite a good listen. And then, of course, my other two things are Mighty Morphin Power Rangers, which I actually leave work to every day because... That, damn it, that's the way you should leave work to. Mighty Morphin Power Rangers. And Kamen Rider Black RX as well. I'm pretty much not ashamed to say. But, yeah, the music is definitely one of the most consistent. I would say Decade would hold on to that honour as well if it weren't for a couple of crappy songs they throw in there as well. Mm. I don't like what was it called? Ride the Wind?
I like the start of that, before he starts singing.
Starts good, and then like, he starts...
Yeah. I like that. But then he starts
a bit
moving his mouth.
But no, Double pretty much holds on to that distinction, and it's the overall feel. It's got that very sort of detective-like edge to it that fits the character, fits the atmosphere, and you know you are listening to a Kamen Rider Double episode.
Yeah. Well, have you listened to the Movie War soundtrack where they mix in the final couple tracks? They mix Double style with Decade style.
Yes,
that is kind of cool when it's like it's epic instrumental, but it's still Double.
Mm. I will say with Decade though, the stuff that Gack does, that's pretty cool.
Oh yeah,
Gack's awesome.
Gack is pretty much universally fantastic. I first heard his stuff for Dirge of Cerberus. And since then, I mean, anytime I hear something, man can't actually save his life, but he can.
It's because he's reincarnated from a samurai and can see ghosts and never really ages.
And he has a gun for an arm.
This is the facts. He says that he is a reincarnated samurai, and also he says he can see ghosts. This man is awesome, or clinically insane.
Or clinically awesome.
I will say on a random Gack note, I saw one of my friends, Phil, showed me a live showing of one of his concerts, and he was totally wearing a awesomely communist kind of style jacket. And it was,
oh, he wears that in a lot of stuff. They like modeled the character in Final Fantasy in the Final Fantasy VII compilation, the Genesis. They modeled Genesis after Gack. So, like, they did a live action scene at the end of Dirge of Cerberus, and it's.
Oh, I saw that. That was cool.
Yeah, that he did like the whole music video in the outfit, and probably slept in it for days later.
I wanted to throw in if you ever want to hear like a track that embodies everything that's really cool in an understated way about Double, find the opening track for Double on the Movie War soundtrack. It's this really quiet saxophone piece that just gets everything across.
I remember that one. That was like. It's just so 1940s detective.
Yeah, it's like a minute 47, but it's kind of morose. It's a little because it's very Naomi Sokichi based, but it just gets across the feel that it's, and especially if you've watched Movie War after that Decade part, for you know that cacophony ends and then you hear this soft saxophone music. It's almost like I have a lot of real comforting thoughts about that music.
Hmm. Yeah. Anyway, yeah, music, I think, was universally considered good. Second last thing. This I wanted to talk about because it left me a bit cold in some ways and left me a bit hot in others. Shut up. I don't like you. Episode 49, the epilogue. There are things about this episode I absolutely love. However, there are things I absolutely hate. I adore how Shota has played, how even after a year, he's still just out of habit talking to Philip. And he picks up on it, and it's not like he's doing it and never realizes it. He picks up on it. I love the fact that, like, during the flashbacks that seemed like they were set months ago, if not right at the start of the year, that Wakana she's basically fused completely with her memory, and then suddenly, oh my god, he's gone, and he saved me, and all that stuff, and then she has to figure out a way of saving him, and I love Shroud. Shroud's death seems a bit random, but it needs to be done, I think. The whole bring family together. Love that stuff. Love, love, love. Loved Teruyu in it. Just sort of, his personality had done 180, and he said, I will not let anyone harm Futo.
Mm.
I will not let anyone make the city cry, to quote Shotaro. And then you have the annoying small child and the annoying, oh, we're so cool, we've got memories, yay! Shut up.
I did like that those kids got their asses utterly kicked with no contest.
Yeah, I loved it. Yeah. It wasn't like, you know, the original users put up a fight. No, no, no. See, Joker, he's better than you. And I love Joker. And, like, he did a little wrist flick when he just says, call me Kamen Rider Joker, and flicks the wrist. It's just like, yeah, you're going to get the crap beaten out of you. But it was just, yes, it was fun to see them get the snot beaten out of them. But apart from the comedy value of seeing the energy guy stamp his foot and go, why isn't anyone paying attention to me? I can honestly say I wanted to punch those guys myself because they were just so annoying as hell. And it just, like I said, the stuff with Shota, Philip's revival was wonderful to me. Like, Philip, he'd been, like, regenerating for months or something inside the extreme memory. He comes down, he's like, hello to you. And it's like, you know, he's making a bit of a laugh at him, and Shota's just sort of, and then, like, runs up to the child and says, you're this, I've been watching you, and we could use you, and you're not very, I loved all that. And then, like, the build up to possibly, Shota was oddly flamboyant after he became double again. I'll just say that now. It was like, yes, finally I can do it again, and he does all the thing, and then you end up in the, didn't you forget to say anything? Yes, it's the one thing I'll say to everyone who makes this city cry. Count up your sins. Fantastic. Ruined by the fact there was so much focus on the annoying teenagers and one small child who had no place there.
The teenager focus, the only reason I didn't mind it is because it built them up and it made the audience hate them so much that it was utterly satisfying to see them get their asses kicked. And that none of them redeemed themselves. None of them, you know, went like, oh, I'm such a sad person because of this. No, it's just like, you're a bunch of punks and we're going to kick your asses. The kid was odd. I think that actually apparently that kid played Child Shotaro in some episode.
Really?
Oh, that was way back in the start.
Yeah. So that kid actually had, I think that might have been why they brought him in, just because there was, like, that small circular thing to it. He was kind of frustrating, but a lot of Japanese kid characters have that weird thing where they seem to come to ludicrous emotional conclusions. And I'm not sure if that's actually all that unrealistic in that culture. So I always have trouble figuring out whether how objective to be about it. But the kid was definitely not, a high point of the episode. But I was happy, actually, with how much of Shotaro and the rest we got to see. I thought it was going to be, like, 90% that, you know, that exec group. And it was going to try to pump them up to be cool new bad guys. And I loved that they did not get to be cool new bad guys.
No, like, when they're going, cockroach one was after being beaten by Joker, and he's like, and he just picks up the memory. Teruyu pretty much breaks his hand.
Yes.
And then Shota just comes up, grabs it, I am so not wasting my time with you.
Smacks him in the face.
He didn't even smack me, just flicked him. being flicked by a guy who punches, you know, that are measured in tons probably hurts quite a bit.
And then he just stomps the memory, too. I love that. Like, not even a powerful, you know, like, memory break or anything. He just drops it, crunch.
Looks like, well, the whole head flicking was a complete reference to that previous episode. I can't remember the dude's name, but the guy that came out of jail.
Yeah.
The whole time, every time Shotaro did or say something silly, the guy would flip him in the head. I think that was a total reference to that, because he learned something from him.
Totally, yeah.
That was actually pretty, like, every time. It wasn't just when he said something silly, it was when he looked at him. Hello, bang.
Yeah.
But that's a very good point. I didn't think of that before. Yeah, yeah. It's like, you know, it's like he's growing up and he's, like, become the mature man thing. You're an idiot. Pop.
Punk.
Cut. Rider, flick.
And his head explodes.
Yeah, but like, you know, really, in realistic terms, your head should have come off there.
Well, something that's fun to point out is if you go by the magazine stats they come up with for the different rider forms, Joker is supposed to actually be the weakest form of double.
Well, that would make sense, because, I mean, he's still a fair bit stronger than people, but he thinks he's people. He is, like, the Joker memory and the Cyclone memory and whatnot, they're all meant to be used in conjunction with each other. So it would make sense that he's far more powerful than a bunch of idiot children using memory they don't know how to use.
And it also explains, because a lot of people, you know, I think there's actually, you know, I bring up things that I saw hotly debated. Of course, one of the most hotly debated things was Philip coming back. And there are a lot of people who say, you know, oh, he should have just stayed as Joker, you know, or people say, you know, why didn't he use Joker when blah, blah, blah. And it's like, well, you know, actually, for all the times that they don't reference them, this time, the magazine stats would kind of cover that, because Joker is not as powerful as Cyclone Joker. And, you know, if for instance, he's fighting the Utopia Dopehound, why would he, you know, why would he become a hand-to-hand combat fighter who's less powerful than Cyclone Joker against a guy who can suck his life out through his hands?
That would have been good. Like, I think people just like the Joker design, just like striped black.
I adore it. I mean, it just came in the mail yesterday.
Do you basically have an entire room dedicated to double now?
No, a lot of my figure arts, actually, I end up putting back in the boxes, because that's the easier way to store them with my lack of display space.
I know where you could store them.
In your house?
No, my house.
Yes. No, not your house, my house.
You need to store them in your house, Andy. You got enough of your own.
You don't have that.
I've heard about yours. Nicole told me all about them.
The mansion. Yeah. The mansion full of figure arts.
That's why I need more. Clearly.
I've still got 1 inch free. I could stick them in.
Yeah, I've got quite a bit of space.
Hey, they're flexible, man. You can curl them up to fit into all the nooks and crannies.
But, Chris always seems to have unlimited funds when it comes to things as well, because he just gets everything.
Well, no, I
think that's
okay.
Called prioritizing toys over food.
This is on topic. Okay, this is one of my shames. I missed the pre-order on both Nazcas.
Both of them?
Yeah. Could not afford it, because that was right in the heart of convention time. Yeah. So I was like, I'm just going to have to suck it up and pay extra for them whenever they come out someday in the future.
I like how you are resigned to buying them anyway, though.
Well, I have to buy them. I mean, I'm sorry, I have to buy them.
See, this is what he says to people as well. It's like, you have to buy it. You can't have that,
you know,
can you?
For instance, to our esteemed host, you know, you are going to buy the Weather Dopant figure art. I mean, I'm just saying, and, you know, I'm throwing it out there.
I'm getting Fang Joker, and I'm getting Weather.
I know. And
because I love those, and I would wear them as a hat if I could.
And just to roll the dice for you here, you know, if you pay the pre-order for Weather right now, it will be cheaper than whatever you end up paying for him when he comes out. Just throwing it out there.
I also want to get the Revolve Tech Genobreaker, though, so...
I'm trying to be a, you know, my normal helpful self. Andy can tell you all about it.
I appreciate your sneaky buy to double, because you will be like me. I really do appreciate it. I think it's very good of you to want us all to be at your level.
See, exactly. My tactics aren't as devious as Chris. I just say you should buy this.
Yeah.
Andy.
God damn it! Now I've got to get it.
You are a devious bastard, Andy. Not really.
I'm no Chris.
All I hear about from anyone from Europe is about how Andy makes them buy this, and Andy makes them.
It's not me.
It is.
It is. Really? It's not me. Who goes around? Who went around basically for 2 weeks doing nothing but pressing skull?
Chris?
You.
I would never do that. I don't know what you're talking about. Jeez.
Mike, this is now the batteries are running low.
That's because you basically ran around in a circle pressing it for 24 hours a day.
That's what I do on my weekends.
Every time you went on Skype with Andy, it was just been, so Andy, how are you? Skull. Are you feeling skull? Are you at skull? All right, Andy, shut up.
I got to admit, Andy's tactic's a little bit outdated. Nowadays, you got to hit this one over and over again. But that's just my opinion.
Eternal looks stupid. I'm just saying that now.
But it's blue. It's got a blue tip.
People.
That's probably a medical condition. Anyway, you two have to talk about the episode.
Who? Which one first?
The ones that just made noise.
Me, okay then. I didn't really have a problem with anything in that episode. It was just an epilogue. Having said that, if the series ended on episode 48, I would say, great! That was an awesome way to end it on. With basically the door to be left open for this Kamen Rider Joker. But at the same time, I'm happy it ended on 49. I didn't have a problem with anything. Basically, that group of kids were a bunch of jabronis. Yes, they were annoying, but they were meant to be annoying. They weren't designed to be anything else but annoying. They were meant to have the shit kicked out of them. And as Chris says, Joker is the smallest leveled form for Double. And that leads into pretty much Shotaro's story throughout that episode. He's just hanging in there. He's doing the best he can with what he's got. And regardless of that, he will soldier on, which was the whole point. And with what he's got, he's pretty damn awesome with. I would say I was a little bit disappointed that they were going to bring Philip back with the brilliant exit they gave him in 48, but his entrance back into the storyline, just as good. Just as good. I can't really say anything else other than that. Yeah, we got the kid. Yeah, we got the whole subplot, but does it really matter at the end of the day? Did it really distract from the overall storyline? Nah, not really. And again, I agree with the other sentiments where Shotaro can still hear Philip's voice in his head because that's all he's been used to for the past year and a bit. So he would have that monologue. That's pretty much all I can say. I like the fact that the main villain, though, did use his dependent memory like a blinking asthma inhaler.
Yeah, I was wondering about that. I should probably throw in with you that I was also hardcore of two minds about Philip coming back, because it was such a good exit, and to do if they just brought him back, you know, in a way that was not effective, it would have been a real big blow to the effectiveness of that show. But I thought it worked because a lot of people, you know, it's funny, a lot of people started saying, oh, you know, this has ruined the series, they cheapened his death. But at the same time, Double was not a series that hinged on, you know, death and darkness. Like death was a big thing in Double when it happened. But at the end of the day, Double is also about, you know, being a hero and being the giver of justice and having a good time and making sure people don't cry. And Philip coming back, it fits the mood of the show. So it's funny because it's like, if it does bother you, dear listener, that Philip came back, really there's nothing wrong with that, because yes, it does have a negative impact on the emotional aspect of the show, but at the same time, it is emotionally in tune with the show. So it's a fun thing to think about, because it's a very open-ended debate, really, because there's no clear-cut way for it to have happened, I think.
And, of course, with the family back together, okay, it's at odds of what we've been used to with them, but at the same time, this is not the same family that was on the planet Earth. This is the family that Philip always wanted back together for that one brief moment, and he's truly happy, and they all are. And they are a part of Philip, and they're a part of the world's greatest is. Didn't like the arrogance behind them, but it was still a good way to basically sign off that aspect of the storyline. And I've made everyone quiet.
It's my turn now. Yeah.
It's your turn.
It's my turn. I've got a couple of issues with the episode, but it's me being picky. First, kid. I generally tend to not like kids. End of statement.
A large portion of Newcastle can be tested to.
I hate how they talk. I hate how they taste.
Well, the taste you get used to. It's not as satisfying as a normal human meal, but you know. See, I don't define them as human either. I didn't. Obviously, I was meant not to like the group of teens, so it worked on that level, but I wanted to break their heads in with stones or rocks. I thought the flashback sequences weren't obviously flashbacky sequences enough for me. Like, you only had the white flash, and then it was like meant to be back.
I agree with you, actually, very much.
It was only the second time through when I watched it, I was like, so this is a flashback. Oh, the white flash is meant to be, hey, let's go back in time. Because the first time I watched it through, I was like, but we saw at the beginning of the show, Futo Tower was all fixed. Oh, those were all back in time. Oh, okay. A little bit more obvious would have been nice.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Wasn't horrible the way they did it, but yeah, a bit more obvious would have been nice. I liked how the board as well in the hangar area hadn't been cleaned from Charming Raven. I thought that was nice because it had been a year. So it was nice that Shotaro had just left that the way it was. I thought that was nice. Another random passing, which was nice, which was useful, was Shroud dying. Why did she die? I don't know. She just did. And that was... It was good to see what happened to her, but, you know, I was like, oh, you should do what you think's right, Wakana. I'm dead. Boom. Okay. And Wakana was just like, oh, Mum's dead. Do you think she just left the body in the middle of the field there to rot? Probably.
It probably dissolved into a pile of bomb memories and then exploded.
Oh, that would have been awesome. one thing I did also like is... The use of costumes coming back, though I would have preferred slightly better ones than Cockroach on Anomano Karis. I was like, oh, these are the suits they're bringing back.
Anomala Karis.
Yeah, that one.
It's Greek and Latin. It's not that hard to say.
Uh-huh, I don't care.
Just say Detrim.
I don't care.
You're a bad person and I don't like you.
Well, you know, it's a mutual hatred, I'd say. Wakana giving her body to Philip. I did question, should Philip have just been Wakana in Wakana's body? Because that would
have been so creepy.
That would have been super creepy, but I think that would have made... When I say made more sense, I use the term extremely loosely.
In terms of being resurrected from the planet's library, using the likewise powers of your sister who's mad with power and Gaia memories, then yes, you know, there's...
Exactly. See, you know where I'm coming from.
Of course I do.
That's a sad reflection on Chris's mental state.
Well, you know. we both share.
He knows where you're coming from.
And I thought the scene when it looked like Shotaro had died was basically in there for the preview.
It was, for the
last episode. That's the only reason that happened. And the way they shot it, I thought was kind of irritating, because you had the sideways shot, when you can clearly see there's no extreme memory thing behind him, and then they go, oh no, it was there. It's like, oh, okay, I can understand why you're doing this, but it's a little bit frustrating, I'd say. But I will say it has one of my more favored endings to Kamen Rider, going through all of his forms, just whipping the crap out of this energy dude, beating the, like, they're just going, ha ha, oh, we're going to be Luna Trigger now. Ah, we got you. We're going to be Heat Metal now, and we're just going to mess you around for a bit. And I thought ending it on his catchphrase was a really nice idea. And that final shot, I thought was awesome. Him pointing at the camera and it coming up, thank you for watching us over the year. Because I was like, yes, and thank you for making such an entertaining show. It's a shame we haven't seen the movie yet.
Oh, that's driving me nuts because I really don't want... Let's be honest, Kamen Rider movies are not the best.
This one.
This one, though. Sakamoto.
I'd say Double seems to be doing them better. Like, I'm saying Double seems to be doing a better basing on the Kamen Rider Decay crossover movie, but at least this one, you do not need to watch this to finish the series.
Well, also, you know that Ultraman movie that you're cursing me about getting you to watch because it was so cool?
Burn in hell!
You know how the action was done on that? That director is doing the Double movie. That's why I'm pumped for the Double movie.
Yeah, that's good.
It looks good from the trailers, and I think it should hopefully round up the series nicely. And also, Ooze is in there, because I don't want to call him O's. I just want to call him Kamen Rider Oo.
It's O's.
I want to call him Oo.
Kamen Rider Oo. Ooh.
And he'll just wave his arms in front of you and go, Oo.
I don't like the fact he's in the movie.
Oh, well, it's a crossover. They have to do
it. Yeah, but that's what I hate. That's what I hated about All Riders.
I think it's become a necessity now for them to basically shove the next Kamen Rider into their movie, because that is how they're going to be... that's pretty much they're saying, hey, look, this dude's coming up next. We got him in our movie. Hey, we're advertising it. Woohoo!
But at least it's more legit this time, because if you know how when the Foundation X lady's looking at her iPod and you see the medals from O's as one of the Foundation X projects.
Yeah.
So, yeah. I like that to me is a little bit more solid than Decade's. You know, Decade has a kind of catch-all in that he's like, portals everywhere! This one is like a little bit more solid because it's like, oh, you know, this the Foundation X is apparently linked, you know, they have their hands in a lot of bad stuff. And some of that bad stuff is Gaia Memory, some of that bad stuff is Greed Metals. And it makes it at least, like, his cameo in the Double movie doesn't feel as shooed in. And it's certainly not going to, I'm sure it's not going to be like in All Riders when Double just kind of showed up, beat the crap out of Shadow Moon, then left.
I hope not. Yeah, I don't know. I saw the preview, like the 30-second preview they did. And it was sort of like I get the horrible feeling it's not going to be that. It's going to be I'll show up, beat the crap out of the Luna Dope and then leave.
Well, at least it's not eternal.
I like the fact that they are definitely fully establishing the same universe. And I am liking the fact that it is, you know, maybe we will see Foundation X in either movie war or in the actual series. It would be really nice to see like they're funding the Greed. Mm-hmm. Or whatever, like the Greed in this modern world need to work with the modern system or whatever. It was really nice to see that. Plus, I just want to see Foundation X get their comeuppance.
Do you think there could be another Shocker? Because we know that Shocker were the main guys back in the way early.
I'm really sure that's where they're going with these guys. Because in the classic series, there was Shocker, there was Die Shocker, there was Destron, all these different groups, but they were always revealed to have the same leader at the end.
Son of Shocker.
The Shockmaster. Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah, the only really other thing I'd wanted to ask was actually, anyone got any opinions on the preview we've seen of O's?
Ooh. Oh,
I think it looks okay.
Anyone got an opinion of Larry?
I think O's looks okay, but it's like every Kamen Rider series, it's the same thing. The design, because we're so used to what's on TV now, the design looks weird and kind of unappealing, and the show sounds weird, and then the moment the first episode comes up, it's kind of like, oh, I'm kind of warming up, and then if it doesn't play out badly, it's kind of like, eventually I'll probably get into it, I'll probably get some of the toys. I like the Kandroids, I think that's a really cool idea. And you know,
it's an odd idea.
Given how many times I've gone through the cycle with Kamen Rider shows, I'm at the point now where it's like all I really have to say before an episode airs is I hope the writing and the acting is good enough to make me get into it, because that's all I really got.
One thing I would like to say is I just hope they do not go down the path of what Double got out of quickly is look at giant 3D monster.
There are. I don't know. They've got one at least.
They've got one, but you know, Double had quite a few. I'm hoping
it's better
just
quality.
Don't do it all
better
the time.
Quality than you'd find in Double.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's just from one trailer, though, for a couple of seconds. It'll either hold up or not when we see it in action. I will say that the shot of all the bikes lining down was quite nice.
Mm-hmm.
I do like the look of some of the Greed. They look interesting.
The designer Greed is the guy who designed the Agito monsters.
Oh, that's good, then.
So I'm pumped.
He did Lord.
Yes.
That'll be interesting.
Is it going to be... Do we know if it's meant to be as violent as Agito?
I'm not sure, but the...
Isn't the first episode involving his underwear or something like that?
Well, I mean Agito's had silly stuff and then had, like, cat monsters stuffing people into trees.
Yes!
So it's...
Yes!
Andy, you do realize there were other... people died in other ways in that show.
I just like the idea of putting someone in a tree.
Oh, you're out of your tree! Now you're back in it.
Yeah.
What?
I don't know. You're out of your tree.
I like the idea of dropping people out of the air as well.
I kind of like that bit in Kuga where a female Grongi drop kicks a guy, sends him flying, he hits the ceiling and bounces off it and bounces off the floor.
Yeah.
That was kind of...
I like Agito.
How is any of this aimed at children again? Even by crazy Japanese standards?
This is a little off topic, but... Kuga actually scared children. That's why in Agito, some of the monsters are not quite as harsh, although they still... Like, Kuga and Agito...
I would argue the lords are more terrifying than the Grongi.
I thought so, too, because the lords are... The lords are literally a divine force preventing evolution, and that's a little bit more terrifying to me than a bunch of serial killers. But...
Yeah.
God,
they're evangelists.
They're evangelists. Both series, but apparently the Grongi more so, actually legitimately frightened children to some degree.
I think a lot of Kamen Rider monsters, if you pay any attention to them, would give you a bit of the heebie-jeebies.
Yeah.
My main thing about whenever I approach a new show, especially when it comes to something like Super Sentai or Power Rangers or Kamen Rider, I always go by, I'm not going to really judge it so much until I watch it and get a taste for it myself. I mean, I'll admit, I had my reservations about Double. Then I got something. I will say that I've got some fears, I suppose. The main one being, I do believe they're taking the whole guy memory and... The main is they did it with Kiva following Deno, and I think the medals are pretty much the guy in memories.
Oh, yeah.
For O's.
Mm, yeah.
That's my main fear. It's taking a concept and thinking, how can we go and make this so that we can carry on this thing and still sort of try and make it better? Oh, instead of having two in the belt, we'll have three in the belt have a load of them. Forms based on that.
I'm not too worried about the medals, but just to add to your fears, the Gumba Ride card machines have added an O's triple medal reader to the front, and they're releasing candy medals, and there's going to be a Decade medal, and an Amazon medal, and a Double medal. And...
Yeah, which we will completely snap up, Chris. I kind of know. And TJ Omega is already cursing you in advance. I do know that man goes through a lot of emotional energy just to get all this stuff.
Are you not scared, Chris, of what repercussions Ooze will have on you when you when figure arts come out?
The upside of the figure arts thing is that we don't know if it's literally going to be 3x3x3x3 every time a new metal comes out. And also, the like Double had this series where it was literally Double and you can split them in half and put the different halves together. They're doing that for O's, but because of how O's splits up, it doesn't affect his articulation as much. So there are options.
But will they do that with Figuarts?
Probably not.
Or will they just use the money and keep making them and make you buy them all?
I'll take someone down with me. Don't worry.
I wonder who he is aiming at.
He can't break me. I'm not getting all of the Double ones.
Oh, you will.
No, but
Nah.
Also say,
he's already got me calf convinced to get a Fang Joker and a Web Damashi Wetter. And I actually tried to get Fang Joker about 20 minutes ago, but I forgot I have to get a new debit card. Damn you all. See? Shut up. Yeah, but listen, I've never tried to order from a Japanese store before, so
it's the sauce.
Also, and then after buying a stupid web store off Jai for £30, and now I'm going to be down £55, and it's all sort of stuff. You're all bastards.
The medals are going to be pretty cheap, though. That's the upside.
I'm sure.
The medals are being sold at about 100 yen, I think, per medal. And
what about on the secondary market for the rest of us?
That'll be different, yeah. And they're also they're also doing Gashapon capsule exclusive medals. And,
of course they are.
Yeah. one other thing about those medals, I will talk about the costume, but let's leave that until the show comes on. I was going to mention the costume, but medals. They're already introducing Akiva, Fize, Decade, and Double Medal.
And in the capsules, they're doing Ryuki and Ryuga and a different double.
As long as they don't do Oja, or I will have to get it.
They will.
They already decided, we're totally going to go back to previous riders and not wait like we did with the Gaia memories.
Anyway, I think 3 hours, 40 minutes, that's probably long enough. Anyone? Because I get the big feeling that we could literally keep on talking about everything from Kamen Rider to the ceiling at this point.
I love the ceiling!
The
ceiling is only there if you believe it is there.
There is no ceiling.
I'll just throw out there, anyone listening, I don't know if you guys have discussion topics for these or not, but if you do, I would like to hear people defend the Heaven's Tornado episodes.
Oof.
Actually, I'd like to hear that, too. Also, Nightmare.
I can stick up for Nightmare, because Nightmare was a pair of silly episodes, but not done to the degree that Heaven's Tornado was done.
And they had wooden memories as well.
Yeah, and CS Toys made some.
Yes, I saw they were ace.
The only thing that really got me into that episode was the fact Wetter nearly killed them.
The Heaven's Tornado thing, I think that was just designed just to show off that the guy that played Philip can do some break dancing, to be honest.
And that you can't ignore this.
Okay, lads. I believe the teacher who must get stuck hosting the thing is to offer the other panelists a chance to, I believe the term is, pimp themselves out. Is that the word?
Oh, Jesus. We do that here?
It's better than prostitute themselves cheaply.
But I like to do that.
So, Andy.
Yes.
Anywhere you'd like to send anyone?
No.
Apart from to a horrible war for your grave.
I do some YouTube stuff. If you like YouTube and you like stuff, you should check out my YouTube stuff. I suppose I also do a Transformers podcast somewhere called something or other, and
Do you know there's someone out there who's never heard of you who's sitting there going, God, I'd love to know what else he does.
PR frontman.
No one is like that. Most people are like, how do I get away from this man? And you can't, because there's an ice age coming.
That was actually very well timed. Matt.
Oh, do I have to pimp myself out? This thing's going
out. I don't care if it's your forum. Just do it.
Okay, you can find me on the Nerdsphere, in which this very podcast is a part of. I'm a complete whore. But I do a YouTube channel called Timey Too Wimey, and it's awesome, and I'm getting links already to something that's got sort of all about what we're talking about. So I'm going to move over to Chris.
I have a YouTube channel, which is called Vanjul on Us, and I do the TFW Transformers podcast. And I also like to make music in my spare time and make short movies in my spare time. And I'm working on a cover of Lady Gaga's Paparazzi in the form of Industrial. I call it the Industri Gaga Project. I'm trying to think of ways to film. Also, go check out my another YouTube channel called youtube.com/KingLaffo. I'm trying to be as awkward as I can, because whenever I hear people do pimping, it always tends to be a little bit awkward or really scripted. I mean, I could also go like, well, if you want to if you want to check me out on the internet, I'm at www.youtube.com/venge1us. You could click, Chris, comment, rate, whatever, 5 stars with your thumbs.
I was about to say I could do a bit of whoring that you and I can both indulge in. You can catch me and Chris in the next episode of Transformers Victory.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah, you can. Really? I'm Perceptor in it. You're some guy called Greatshot.
Wait a second. I have Greatshot lines to do?
Yeah.
Or did I record them already?
Yeah, you had lines to do. Brandon's really bitching about it.
I haven't... The last lines I got were for Fix It.
Oh, was it Fix It? Oh, sorry. No, I don't know.
I did Great Shot as well, but I haven't recorded a Great Shot line in like a year and a half because I thought that he was done with the series. Like, I didn't think he appeared again.
I think it is Fix It, dude.
Okay. I wish it was Great Shot. I like Great Shot more than Fix It. Fix It is stupid. Fix It just complains, and I have to do this voice where I sound like I don't know. I sound like a dude who gets into political debates on YouTube when I'm doing Fix It's voice.
Oh yeah. God. Anyway, I suppose that's it. I'm not going to tell you where you can find me because I don't think anyone wants to watch me anyway.
You know about dinosaurs?
Oh, for Christ. No one cares about dinosaurs.
Did you know that he used to have a channel called G-Wolf V2?
Oh, for Christ's sake.
Yeah, now he's got this channel called G-Wolf V3. I don't know, it's completely different from G-Wolf V2.
Well, some things...
I don't like any of you. Anyway, lads, honest to God, this was a stupid little idea I came up with on the spur of the moment, and I'm very grateful that everyone went along with it.
Yay!
And that no one deceived me at any point. And Chris, it was nice to finally talk to you for longer than 5 minutes. Anyone listening to this, I hope you enjoyed it, and we'll talk to you all later. Bye bye.
Kisses, you lovely people. Kisses.
This is Time Lord saying, count up your sins. Bye bye. Oh, last word.
Kizutsuita sono ute ni nani wo dabite ru utareta hoho wo nugu yoni warai kurushimi wa yasashisa o Shinasaya shinai Yowasa o shireba Hito wa tsuyoku nareru Sawa o mawe no tsumi wo kazoe ここから先の自分に会えるまで さあ青豆の罪を
Buzz Lightyear pet dispenser at the moment.
Yay.
But, woo! What, why? No.
Oh, damn, I'm left.
I don't want to know why a grown man has a Buzz Lightyear pet dispenser.
Because it's not.
It's not right!
Hi, this digging up dinosaurs.
I'm sorry, I offend God.
I have a friend who collects those.
Standing in a desert, just holding a bone, screaming, "Look! Evolution is real!"
Heathen, burn him at the stake.
Oh, a caption on the TF Wiki with the Arcadis that Beast Wars one. It's like, he's proof that dinosaurs evolved into birds. Burn him.
Damn Arcadis!
Oh, I want an Arcadis. He's cool.
Right, I'm gonna just shuffle something here so I can put my mic on a box, and then I won't sound so funny. Ah! I'm moving Kamen Rider toys. It's on topic.
I shall say hello and goodbye.
Hello,
hello and goodbye. Come back, Soph.
Why, Mikey?
Because I like you better than him.
Oh, thank you.
That's mean.
I love you too, Mikey. I love you too.
Harsh.
I've known the man long enough to be harsh.
That's true.
I have to boil half a dozen eggs for work tomorrow, so I'll see you later.
Okay.
Bye.
This is all in the synchronization audio file, incidentally.
And on my recording, too.
You can relive the moment as we hear of the boiling of eggs.
That can be like the unedited bloopers reel.